So I guess we stepped back from the brink of fiscal disaster. Is that how this works? Moscow Mitch McConnell's going to let the government stay open? Is that it? Yeah. Oh, and by the way, I hate insurance companies.
It's Friday!
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Here we go, off and running on this 8th day of October 2021. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us live on the interweb tubes. It's also a great place to go to get the rerun stream any time that you feel like you'd like to listen to the program. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Hi, I'm Robin. It's Friday on the front porch. We've got a lot to cuss and discuss over. Here in about an hour's time, we will gather together inside the old holler tree that we sublet from the Keebler Elves that over the river and through the trees and around which we gather, and whereat Sparky occupies the seat of honor. But between now and then, if you feel so inclined, do please feel free to wander on over to the Horn chat room. Yep, if you pop in there right now, you'll be greeted by early arrivers Otto DeShot and Squeaky, and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third-stage guild navigator, has in fact folded space to become Man Cave. Hey, you hear that? No, you don't hear that. Don't have to use the fan today because it's only 76 degrees here in the fabulous Horn Studios at the magnificent Kincaid Mansion. Woo! Partay. Yeah, it's bearable in here. It absolutely is. The Skype link will be up presently, I'm told, over at headon.live. But like I said, pop on by, pick yourself out a screen name, password, so, and why not? But every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different, so thanks go out to our 8th day of the month subscribers, and that means a profound and hearty, heartfelt thank you to Brendan. Thank you, Brendan. And thank you to Susan. And thank you to Nancy. And thank you to Dwayne. Thank you to Marcia. Thank you all so kindly for being partial sponsors of the program and helping to keep this little independent liberal broadcasting effort on the air all these years. Thank you so very much indeed. The Skype link is already up. So all you got to do is go over, press the button at HeadOn.live, and you'll be carried into the aforementioned old holler tree, and you'll grab a seat right there at the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, and we'll get that going in a little bit under an hour. Mm-hmm. Yep. Fundraising goal to finish the week, well, it's at $970. $970 to get even with the, not get even with, that sounds vindictive, doesn't it? But to be fully funded for this first full week of October, okay? Okay, so that's where that is. Let's get started with a note from Ron in Raleigh. I haven't heard this, but there's been a lot of talk about getting rid of the filibuster so that the Biden administration's policies can go forward. Do people believe that somehow if the filibuster is changed, modified, or eliminated, the Senators Manchin and Sinema will vote for the reconciliation bill or the voting rights bill or anything else that President Biden's putting forth? You haven't heard that, Ron? I've been talking about that for months, my friend. Because we are nothing. We are zip. We are zilch. We are nada. The only thing that matters in America is Joe fucking Manchin and his eager young space cadet ward, Kirsten Enema. Yeah. But anyway, Ron says, since Sinema will not talk to the press, we have no idea what she'll vote for. I don't see that Senator Manchin will vote for any amount. He has demanded that the $3.5 trillion infrastructure bill be cut down to $1.5 trillion, but he won't state what he wants to cut. We know he doesn't want to cut anything that affects his personal bottom line, but we don't know for sure. To be honest, a $1.5 trillion bill won't be worth a damn as far as repairing the country's infrastructure. $15 billion a year over 10 years, well, spread over 50 states, it's not $15 billion over 10 years. That would be $150 billion over 10 years to make $1.5 trillion. Is still a drop in the bucket. Man, I'm glad not to have blown the ciphering for once. This is, that ciphering mistake's Ron's, not mine. It's true. Senator Manchin calls for a strategic pause, which will push a vote on the plan close enough to the midterm elections to make it moot, since the Republican Party and its surrogates have been whipping up false narratives over critical race theory and other fake stories to cause their base to vote for them. We're in dire danger of a loss of the Congress in the midterms, and if that happens, the U.S. will cease to be a representative republic. Seems fairly, fairly obvious to me, too, Ron. Well, yes, it does, doesn't it? 76 degrees, then, says Scott in San Diego. Perfect day to bust out that gingham halter you've been wanting to wear. I've been wanting to buy one. Those are cute. Listen, didn't Marianne wear one of those? Never mind. Gilligan's Island, yet, right? Steve in New York says, subject line, Democrats, exhibit 2, we can't even get Democrats to support a Democratic president. How exactly does anyone think we could steal a fucking election? Well, yeah, I know. Frustrating. Isn't it? Yes. Yes, it is. And so those are some of the places we can go, some of the things we can examine, look into, what have you, as the evening progresses. He who should not be named has already been named, well, I guess it can't hurt. To go ahead and hear the latest outrage. Of course, what's in a name? Asks Matt in San Francisco. I suggest a name change for the country. United States of Manchinima. The flag can go down to 2 stars since only 2 people are able to make decisions that affect us all. Yeah, it's really kind of a pisser, isn't it, Matt? I mean, it's got to be really galling to be in a civilized state and realize that you're being ruled by at least in part by a jumped up hillbilly, because this country is at this point. I'm really having a hard time getting used to the absence of the fan. It's kind of like when you go to sleep at night. You know, a lot of people go to sleep during listening to this program, and I have to have some noise going, air conditioner, whatever, as I fall asleep at night. Just feels really, really, really quiet in here. There was a deal made. There really was. Moscow Mitch McConnell decided to allow the Democrats to have a little vote so that we could not default on our bills. And so 11 Republicans, including the aforementioned Ms. Moscow Mitch McConnell, I think he probably jumped in at the last minute as a procedural move. John Barrasso of Wyoming, Roy Blood of Missouri, leaving. Susan Collins of Maine. John Cornholio of Texas. Shelley Moore Capito of West Virginia. Lisa Murkowski of Alaska. Rob Portman on his way out the door of Ohio, Mike Rounds of South Dakota, Richard Shelby on his way out the door of Alabama, and John Thune of South Dakota all voted to keep the country from defaulting for at least a couple of more months. What a great debate to have, oh, somewhere around, say, you know, the Christmas season, the holiday season. Right, yeah. But nonetheless, Moscow Mitch did, in fact, let us keep the government open. It was so kind, so sweet, so loving of him. And it passed late last night, and all the alerts flew across my screens. Whatever. At which point in time, being majority leader, Senator Schumer had some things to say.
The best.
As soon as the goddamned ad runs. Right? Yeah. So here we go. All better now.
President, in a few moments, the Senate will pass an extension of the debt limit through early December, avoiding a first ever Republican-manufactured default on the national debt. On Monday morning...
Now, let's be clear. There's nothing untrue in what he just said. It would have been a Republican-manufactured default, but seated behind Chuck Schumer is one Joe Manchin, the third of West Virginia. And the story became not so much about what Chuck Schumer said, but what Joe Manchin did. You know, I'm sorry. I apologize. I genuinely apologize for the amount of time that we spend talking about Joe Manchin. You'd think he was the queen of the freaking May or something, but then again, he is, isn't he? Oh, I know. There's got to be something more compelling out there than Joe Manchin. Maybe we'll talk about it in during the roundtable portion of the program. But let's continue, shall we?
I said we needed to pass a bill to address the debt limit by the end of the week.
We're about 18 minutes into the remarks. Joe's sitting there with his little middle finger under his lower lip and his index finger up on his cheekbone, leaning on his Senate chair.
And that is exactly what we did.
He wipes at his eyes. He wipes at his nose. I guess he's missing that whole don't touch your face kind of admonishment that we do here at this program every evening.
Republicans played a dangerous and risky partisan game.
He's plays chewing some gum. Now he leans over to talk to somebody.
And I am glad that their brinksmanship
now he waves
did not
his
work.
Hand. Okay, so it was Patrick Leahy he leaned over to whisper to, and he kind of waved his hand dismissively, and Leahy leans over to talk to him.
For the good of America's families, for the good of our economy, Republicans must recognize in the future they should approach fixing the debt limit in a bipartisan way. What is needed now is a long-term solution, so we don't go through this risky drama every few months. And we hope Republicans will join in enacting a long-term solution to the debt.
Man, Joe's chomping that gum for all he's worth as Patrick Leahy apparently gives him a bit of an earful, while Chuck Schumer, not exactly my idea of a dynamic leader, but then again, who the hell am I, continues to talk about the fact that Republicans dragged us right up to the brink of disaster. And yeah, I know. Right, and as to the cipher and error, Ron says, sorry about the cipher and error. I wrote the email in a hurry. However, it still ain't jack shit in the face of our failing infrastructure. We couldn't even begin to start work on grid 2.0 with that kind of chump change. Oh, and well chumped we are. Meanwhile, Senator Leahy and Senator Manchin are still huddled deep in conversation.
Limit in December. We're ready to work with them. Leader McConnell and Senate Republicans insisted they wanted a solution to the debt ceiling, but said Democrats must raise it alone.
Chomp, chomp, chomp. My God, he looks like a cow chewing its cud. Don't they have a no chewing gum in the Senate rule, for God's sakes? Did you bring it up for everybody, Joe?
On out, convoluted and risky reconciliation
process. Okay, convoluted and risky reconciliation process, and Joe Manchin puts his face in his hands with just, you know, he should have just put his hand on his forehead, Captain Picard-like, I guess.
Process. That was simply unacceptable to my caucus. And yesterday, Senate Republicans finally realized that their obstruction was not going to work. I thank, very much thank, my Democratic colleagues for our showing our unity in solving this Republican manufactured crisis.
Joe's hanging his head. Hanging his head. Yeah.
Despite immense opposition from Leader McConnell and members of his conference, our caucus held together and we've pulled our country back from the cliff's edge that Republicans tried to push us over.
These are all true statements.
This is a temporary but necessary and important fix. I appreciate that at the end of the day, we were able to raise the debt limit without a convoluted and unnecessary reconciliation process that until today, the Republican leader claimed was the only way to address the debt limit. Let me say that again. Today's vote is proof positive that the debt limit can be addressed without going through the reconciliation process, just as Democrats have been saying for months.
Groovy. Meanwhile, Joe Manchin has gotten up and walked away. And make no mistake, these are symbolic acts. He walked out on Chuck Schumer as Chuck Schumer was saying that they did this sort of the right way. Well, we later found out why he got up and walked away. Yeah. He didn't. His tender multimillionaire fifis were hurt because Chuck Schumer spoke the truth about the American Insurrection Party, otherwise known as the GOP.
I didn't think it was appropriate at this time. We had talked about that, but he felt charged up, and he and I had good conversations.
Why was not it appropriate?
I just think that basically what we got to do is find the pathway forward to make sure that we de-weaponize. Mm-hmm. We have to de-weaponize.
De-weaponize? Really, Joe? What universe do you live in, buddy? De-weaponize. The Republicans were holding a gun to the head of America, and the Democrats were, what? Sitting around waiting for the hostage taker to either blow away America or take a break and decide that they'd wait 2 months and let us worry about it for 2 months. You know what? Stress sucks. It's destructive. And that's what we've got. We've got 2 months of stress and 2 months for the multimillionaires of the for-profit media to play martial music and speculate about what'll happen to Granny if she doesn't get her Social Security check, or what'll happen. Well, I mean, we know at least that Eddie Munster, Paul Ryan will be celebrating somewhere. Remember back in 2012 when we found out it had been his dream since he was standing around a keg getting loaded in college at a fraternity party to shut down Social Security and let Granny fend for her fucking self? Remember that? De-weaponize. The only way to de-weaponize our process is to take the goddamn gun away from the people who are holding it to the head of America. Okay, not all the Democrats are unarmed. Joe Manchin's holding a gun to the head of America, too. So's Kyrsten Sinema, along with all the Republicans.
You can't be playing politics. None of us can. On both sides, okay? On both sides.
Really? You can't be playing politics in a system that is political in the first place? What kind of simpleton idiocy is this? Ah!
I've been very guilty of this, and the frustration was built up. And I'm sure Chuck's frustration was built, but that was not a way to take it out. We just disagree. I've done it differently.
We heard from a couple of Republicans who said that was...
Well, run for Senate Majority Leader, dumbass!
Counterproductive speech. So you worried?
Well, both sides. I'm just saying, it's just a civility is gone, okay? And I'm not going to be part of getting rid of it.
Bullshit binary. Wait a minute. There it is. Both sides. I'm not going to be rid of getting rid of what?
So you worried?
Well, both sides. I'm just saying, it's just the civility is gone, okay? And I'm not going to be part of getting rid of it. I'm going to try to bring it back, and I speak out when I see someone do something I don't like.
We heard you refer to this as an effing embarrassing speech.
Oh, I never say that. Do I? You're confusing me with my good friend John Tester from
Senator, in December, this is going to be so much harder to do. Look, this is
No, we're going to make it.
How are you going to do it? Because you are going to oppose still any changes to the filibuster rules, right?
Yeah, I'm not going to. We can do it without.
We don't need no democracy in the Senate.
We can't go down this path, and we can't play with the good faith. The faith and confidence of this whole beautiful country of ours that we won't pay our bills.
So then, how are you going to do it? I mean, has that begun to reconcile?
Well, we can't play with the full faith and credit. That reminds you. Lo and behold, I think Steve in New York was having a conniption about that just last week. The full faith and credit clause has nothing. Jesus, never mind.
I think that.
But this is an actual senator of the United States. You know, if the guy, or the woman, who works down at the Rippy Mart in town, cannot answer the question, what is the full faith and credit clause in the Constitution? You know, you can at least understand that. But when a sitting member of the Senate of the United States, who's been there for a little bit, thinks that the full faith and credit clause of the Constitution of the United States has something to do with fiscal policy. Yeah, I know. Back to his gum chomping. Lee in New York says, in elementary school, the teacher caught a student chewing gum. The teacher asked, did you bring enough for everybody? He did. The gum was distributed and we all chewed. Another member of the faculty came by in a while. The class smelled like a gum factory. We had to stop. My sixth grade teacher, if you were caught chewing gum, my sixth grade teacher would make you wear it on the end of your nose for the rest of the day. And so it became a bit of a cloak and dagger operation. How could you chew gum in class and not get caught and not wear it on the end of your nose? Well, some of us figured out that you just sort of plastered it against the roof of your mouth and you waited until she turned away, and then you got a good chew in and then back up against the roof of your mouth. Mm-hmm. I never had to wear my gum. Never mind. Joe Manchin's just tired, Robin, Scott in San Diego says. Do you realize how utterly exhausting it is to be a Democrat in name only? Only alien shape-shifting lizard people have it tougher. No, wait. Maybe Manchin is an alien shape-shifting lizard person, P.S. Or maybe he's all tuckered out from toting around all those thick envelopes of fossil fuel cash. Well, that they can get pretty heavy. Yeah.
We can get everybody together and calm down a little bit. Get everybody together and understand.
Who's not calm? I mean, granted, I've been kind of having a conniption here for the last 20 minutes or so, but who's not calm? I mean, our side is simply asking very nicely, could we please actually do the job that people are sent there to do? That is to take care of the, promote the general welfare? That's in the Constitution, isn't it? Yeah. But Joe doesn't want to do that. Joe don't like welfare.
Stand is best for both sides. You can fight about a lot of things, mm-hmm. but you don't throw this out. This is the most serious thing we can do, and we're not going to do it anymore. And I said, remember I told you before, we were not going to default, and we did not default, and we will not default and go through this again. We'll work it out.
Reconciliation, should your party go through reconciliation to do this next
time? I have a difference. I think that reconciliation would not have hurt us, but I understand that there's a lot of people that don't want to, and there's against us this difference. It's a difference of opinion on that.
And, of course, it's an open question as to whether Joe actually really understands what reconciliation is and how it works and the role that the parliamentarian plays. And it does get tiresome. It just does.
But the bottom line is, we shouldn't have to go through reconciliation. We should both agree that this is too serious for any of us to get in trouble with.
Yeah, but see, the Republicans can't do that, Joe, because the Republicans are in thrall to a rump plurality in this country who is only capable of barking and grunting and hooting and screeching and wailing and howling about Joe Biden's age or communism or socialism or critical race theory and the Black Lives Matter trans people. And Joe doesn't quite have the courage to stand up and say that that's all bullshit, because Joe Manchin doesn't know that it's all bullshit. Because there's just so much about government in the United States that Joe Manchin doesn't know. Or if he does know, pretends or chooses to ignore. Yeah. Well, thank you, Steve. Steve in New York's getting us started with a fuck Chuck Schumer $10 challenge. Jesus fucking Christ, what exactly is the purpose of using the rhetorical equivalent of calling the GOP a duty head here? Well, he had to make it plain that I don't know what his alternative was. Well, you know, thank goodness we got that done. He's not talking to the gallery of the Senate. He's speaking for the benefit of the country, trying to help the country to understand how close we got. I mean, I don't like the guy, but he's trying to help the country understand how close we got to disaster and whose fault it was, and whose fault it was matters. I mean, doesn't it? But anyway, Steve will kick in $10 if somebody else will kick in $10, and then we'll be down to $950 to go to finish the week. As Steve points out, Reservoir Dogs. So, we made a deal with our cast, with our captors. After they cut off only half our ear, and we agreed to come back in 2 months, and if we're good, they won't finish cutting our ear off. Yeah. I know. And there's that, too, Steve points out. And no one should have to declare bankruptcy to get health care. You know, there's just so many things that you can't be bothered to think about. Oh, and this just in from our dear friend Rico. Hiya, gorgeous. Ooh, where? There's gorgeous around here somewhere? Oh, my. Thank you. The Love Dan Fisher Challenge. Instead of my bleak, continuing fuck Joe Manchin challenges, I don't think they're bleak. I think they're clear, concise, and to the point, Rico. I want to do something positive for a change. I love your conversations with Dan Fisher to pieces. Literate, smart, and funny. Just one of the highlights of my day when I hear them. So I'm proposing a Love You Dan Fisher Challenge of $100, and I'll kick in another 100 if it's met. Love you, Dan. Love you, Robin, my queen, and love all of you who help keep this wonderful venture going. Rico, in the love-filled confluence of the Berg. It just warms my heart. Rico, it really, really does. This has not been a good day at all, and I was not going to talk about it on air. Maybe I will later. I don't know. But that warms my heart. It really, really does. Thank you, Rico. There's $100 on the table. Let's do the math real quick. If somebody meets Steve's challenge, we're down to $950. If we meet Rico's challenge, we are down to $650. Okay? So Rico's not just doubling your money. Rico is tripling your money. If the challenge is met, there's another $100 behind it. So that'd get us down to $650. And then Ralph says, I'll kick in the $10 on Steve, and I'll add 10 more if somebody else kicks in. So we can get down to $630 real quick. We can actually be $30 away from done with Wednesday. So that's awesome. There's $220 in challenges on the table right now. So could we knock that out before we go to the old holler tree? Is that possible? I know. You get tired of this. I get tired of this. Well, there we go. From Dave in the blind. Comment. Oh, no. It's from Christine. Oh, hey, Christine. Yay. Joe Manchin, proud graduate of Dunning-Kruger University. He graduated with dishonors, Christine. Magna cum dumbass. He doesn't know what he doesn't know. So Steve's challenge has been met by Ralph's. Ralph's needs somebody to kick in 10 now to match hers. And then we will get after Rico's Love Dan Fisher challenge. That's just wonderful. I don't know if Dan's listening tonight, but Dan will be just tickled pink when I tell him that there was a Love Dan Fisher challenge. He'll be absolutely thrilled. So, sorry we had to start with Joe Manchin, but I guess we had to start somewhere. Lord God, he's awful. But, well, we're not entirely done with Joe yet, because he needs us all to understand why it is that he opposes things like child care tax credits and help for struggling working people. Because, you know, Joe's not working people. Joe doesn't really much understand this idea of being working people, and he never has. I will remind you that there is an old political truth that operates in West Virginia, and it is this: no Manchin has ever voted for another Democrat whose name wasn't Manchin. Well, I kind of came up with a corollary to that when our dear friend John in Central Pennsylvania dropped me a line saying this asshole is full of shit. He's a concern troll. Well, corollary to that line about Manchin's not voting for any Democrats not named Manchin is this truth. Manchins never help anyone not named Manchin. I wonder, is he just so high above us that it doesn't bother him at all that he is oblivious and utterly unconcerned about the fact that he is utterly despised by somewhere upwards of 150 million human beings? That there are tens of millions of American citizens who, upon seeing his visage on their screens, whatever manner of delivery it be, start spontaneously swearing. And cursing and spitting on the ground and feeling awful waves of nausea flowing over them. Because as a West Virginian, I'm embarrassed. I'm humiliated. I'm sickened by the fact that one not particularly bright individual from my state is doing so much harm to so many people. Yeah. Joe doesn't want us to become an entitlement society.
So I've been very clear when it comes to who we are as a society, who we are as a nation, and why we are still the hope of the world. I don't believe that we should turn our society into an entitlement society. I think.
Yeah, you know, and what he means by that is, by God, as soon as one of them precious little fetuses that he cares so much about emerges from the womb, that he thinks Mama needs to be right back to work, because we don't need any paid parental leave in this country, because that would create an entitlement society. We don't need to make it. But on top of that, though, while we do want parents right back to work lickety-split, because fuck that kid, it's out of the womb, it's not a fetus anymore, he wants to make sure that the parents really appreciate the nature of the struggle that they have to take care of the new baby, or maybe when the baby gets past newborn and maybe up into toddler, and we want to make sure that it costs those parents $10,000 or $15,000 or $20,000 or more per year to get somebody to take care of baby while mommy and daddy go back to work on the capitalist miracle that is the United States of America. Because if we had a child tax care credit, well, by God, we'd be an entitlement society. And the next thing you know, you'd have like these healthy families just kind of hanging out and taking care of their babies and stuff. And again, who gives a shit about them once they're not fetuses anymore? Right? Right. We don't need to make sure that there's decent pay for the people who come into our homes and take care of our disabled beloveds and disabled relatives and people struggling with the relatively simple business of daily living. Because Joe Manchin never worries about that. Heather Bresch never worries about that. Joey the Fourth never worries about that. Gail Manchin never worries about that. None of those people worry about that because that would be something for the proles to do.
I think that we should still be a compassionate, rewarding society. I think that...
Wait. We should be a compassionate, rewarding society. Really? A reward? When I think of a reward, I think of a bounty. And that's essentially what Joe Manchin is saying. He wants a bounty on American working people. You only get... Or maybe we can think of it as in terms of, you know, puppy training. You only give puppy the reward when puppy quits pooping on the carpet. And so, you know, maybe we need to just sit down and shut up so Joe won't be worried that we're out here thinking we're all entitled and stuff.
It's best for all of us, but compassion means taking care of those who can't take care of themselves, whether they're young, whether they've had some type of a challenge in life, whether it be mental or physical. Those are responsibilities that we have. And we can.
But, I mean, we don't want to pay that much for those responsibilities.
And all meet those responsibilities. And I feel very strongly about that.
Because this state, his state, and I do mean his state, has a deep necessity for that kind of help. So, but, you know, I mean, he wants to have some compassion, but not a lot of compassion, just kind of some compassion. Some little, I don't know, soupçon of compassion.
And we will continue. This is going to take time to get this done. Getting it done quickly is not going to benefit anybody. So let's make sure.
Wait. Hold on. Getting it done quickly isn't going to benefit anybody? I can think of a few tens of millions of people it'll benefit if we can get it done quickly. If we get it done quickly, it quickly goes to Joe Biden's desk and Joe Biden signs it quickly and good things start happening for working Americans, be they Republican or Democrat, be they sane or maggot. I swear it's just all kind of tiresome, wearisome. Isn't it? And then there's the, you know, there's the rest of the stuff that we have to deal with today. Good Christ, it is not, we're not even done with 2021 yet. And the Iowa caucuses are still a good ways away for the presidential election of 2024. We're talking about, you know, winter of 2024. But they're already polling for all they're worth out at the Des Moines Register Mediacom outfit, Mediacom Iowa. Well, Mediacom. The Des Moines Register Mediacom Iowa poll. You know, billable Ricks our dear sister Carol Baker's beloved Iowegia. And there's fabulous news. At least if you're a maggot, or if you are the maggot in chief. Namely, 53% of Iowans now have a favorable view of Donald J. Trump. That's compared to a 45% unfavorable view, and Then there are those 2% of Iowegians who are sitting around picking their teeth with their toenail clippings going, what? Yeah. Now, they didn't ask, do you support him for president? The Des Moines Register didn't. They just said, yeah, do you like him? Yeah, well, yeah, okay, whatever. But that does not bode well because something wicked this way comes. And my ongoing question remains unanswered. How can you obstruct justice and continue to get away with it? Because you see, Nitwit Nero, in a letter from one of his pettifoggers, told four of his former aides, one of them being Steve Bannon, the man who looks like hot dog smell, Two-Shirt Steve, along with Mark Meadows and former Defense Department official Kash Patel, and the guy who used to write his literate tweets, Dan Scavino, he's told them not to respond to any of the subpoenas that have been issued by the legitimately impaneled, legally empowered January 6th Commission. Right? Politico got hold of the letter that said President Trump is prepared to defend these fundamental privileges in court. We're talking about executive privilege among others. And it instructs those four miscreants not to respond to subpoenas coming from Congress. Now, there was a wrinkle in this earlier today, and you have to think it caused some squealing and howling, and maybe he threw a taco bowl or shook up a can of Diet Coke or something.
Right.
Because news came out today that the Biden White House has authorized the National Archives to turn over documents that cover all communications related to Nitwit Nero's activities on January the 6th. Because Nitwit Nero had tried to block the release of those documents. But the White House does not stay with the loser. The White House, the power of the White House goes to the person who won the office. NBC News got hold of the letter from the White House to the National Archives. White House counsel Dana Remus said to Nitwit Nero's pettifoggers in their attempt to keep the documents secret. President Biden has determined that an assertion of executive privilege is not in the best interests of the United States and therefore is not justified as to any of the documents. These are unique and extraordinary circumstances, which is a polite, lawyerly way of saying this motherfucker tried to run a coup on the United States of America. Congress is examining an assault on our Constitution and democratic institutions provoked and fanned by those sworn to protect them. And the conduct under investigation extends far beyond typical deliberations concerning the proper discharge of the president's constitutional responsibilities. In other words, there should be no executive privilege for arguably criminal conduct. The constitutional protections of executive privilege should not be used to shield from Congress or the public information that reflects clear and apparent effort to subvert the Constitution itself. That's about as close as White House counsel can get to saying, we feel pretty comfortable that what Nitwit Nero was up to was both illegal and unconstitutional. And so the White House has authorized the National Archives to release an initial batch of documents that are responsive to a broad inquiry by the January 6th Commission. Nitwit Nero's actions and communications on January 6th, including the rally at the Ellipse, and then the subsequent meetings and communications throughout the day. Whew, that's going to make some senators and some maggot senators and some maggot members of the House of Representatives nervous. I'd say, you know, your Josh Hawleys, your Mike Lees, your Tommy the Tuber, your Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, anointed booger eating future king of Americas, and then all the various and sundry creepy crawly things that are over in the GOP caucus of the House. I mean, we're talking. This is going to be a lot of stuff. Twitter messages, phone calls, visitor logs, phone and visitor logs. Any videos and photos of events he participated in, documents and communications related to the movements and the security of, at the time, Vice President Mike Pencilneck Geek. And the National Archives have been kind of Johnny on the spot on all of this, apparently. They've been producing relevant documents and giving them both to Nitwit Nero's people and to the Biden White House ever since the request was made. And the batch in question was given to both parties today. We don't know exactly what's in it, but the list itself indicates that there should be some fairly damning information. So I guess what's going to happen next is Nitwit Nero goes to court. Doesn't have the best record, but by the same token, he has won a few things. It went largely unnoticed, but lo and behold, he got away with the on the emolument suits. It turns out that emoluments, after all, are something that maybe one would, something slick and slimy that one would, in fact, rub on a Russian hooker, and not something that's actually banned by the language of the Constitution, according to the court system. Yeah, good Lord, says Ron in Raleigh. I thought I was tired of the blatherings of Donald Trump, but I swear to God that if Joe Manchin doesn't shut his insincere pie hole, I might have to resort to a desperate act. This smarmy bastard's gotten on my last fucking nerve. Do the people in West Virginia that vote for this shit hook have the sense to pour piss out of a boot? Ron, we've been over this before. The choice that people had last time around was between Joe Manchin and a guy who makes Joe Manchin look like V.I. Lenin, okay? I mean, because Joe Manchin is running a cult of personality instead of a political party. You don't go anywhere in politics in this country, or in this state, rather, without kissing the Manchin ring. And you get away with just kissing the ring if you're lucky. It is not a pleasant choice. And I feel pretty comfortable about the person, about thinking I know who's going to primary him. And I don't know if that guy's going to have any luck at all. Because, again, Manchin controls the machine. It's not like he won't debate this individual. Because all he has to do is sit around, cash the checks, and wait for the voting to take place. I wish 'twere otherwise, but taint, Ron. Just taint. And we don't have a hell of a lot of a bench in terms of challenging him, because Democrats in this state who want to have a political career can either have a political career, or they can openly oppose Joe Manchin. There is no middle ground. Let's be very, very clear. And I don't say that as a goddamn neoliberal establishment shill. No. Again, would that it were not so. But it is so. And the first thing one has to do in any situation similar to this is face the facts. And then, having faced the facts, you act accordingly. Anyway, nitwit Nero says he is prepared to defend these fundamental privileges in court. Well, these four miscreants are facing up to $100,000 fine if they do his bidding. And I guess they figure it's a lock if the thing goes up to the Supreme Court of the United States that they'll somehow get a pass. Maybe they're right. I don't know. I hope they're not. But I can see how they would be willing to take the bet. And who knows? You know, there's unresolved stuff regarding the Supreme Court of the United States that we still don't know. I mean, why did Justice Kennedy bail out so precipitously? Whatever did happen to his kid, you know, the one who personally handled Nitwit Nero's Deutsche Bank transactions, when in fact Deutsche Bank was up to its eyeballs in corrupt Russian money? Inquiring minds want to know. Isn't that what the line is? Yeah. So it all just remains to be seen, and we hang on tenterhooks. And it's an ugly, ugly moment. And so we wait. And we wait. But lo and behold, Dan Scavino, he was trying to pull a Mo Brooks, Les Brains, and dodge subpoena service. He's due to testify and give a deposition, and it's an in-person deposition, and a deposition ducis tecum, which means a deposition bring your shit with you. And they managed to get him served today. And so now I suppose he figures he'll just ignore this. In conjunction with the fact that he's been told not to honor the subpoena, sounds to me like maybe somebody said to him, yeah, don't worry about it. They accept service and then tell him to fuck off. And of course, well, the ducis tecum part said that the documents had to be turned over by today. According to Politico, Scavino was served with his subpoena Friday. He was served in New York. And there's no word as to whether he'll be held in contempt. Yeah. And so we wait and wait and wait. But it's just a parade of graft and corruption. Yeah. Meanwhile, he rants away as though he's channeling his old racist Klansman daddy. There's a new report out from the House Committee on Oversight and Reform. And it has to do with the fact that Nitwit Nero said that the bedbug infested flea bag in D.C. at the old post office building brought in $150 million in income. But they had $70 million in losses. In a news release today, the committee said, by filing these misleading public disclosures, President Trump grossly exaggerated the financial health of the Trump Hotel. And records show Trump specifically didn't show outstanding balances for properties he owed in other major cities like New York, Chicago, and Las Vegas when he applied to lease the old post office building. The committee also said that the newly obtained documents show that from 2017 through 2020, that Fleabag in D.C. got about $3.7 million in payments from foreign governments. There's those emoluments we're not going to worry about anymore. But nonetheless, the report says that that raises concerns about possible violations of the Constitution's Foreign Emoluments Clause. Well, don't worry about them. And look, there's Deutsche Bank again. Turns out Nitwit Nero, according to the report and the story about it in the Washington Post, he received preferential treatment from Deutsche Bank when the bank allowed Trump to defer payments for 6 years on the principal of the property's $170 million loan. $170 million loan. And said that there are new and troubling questions about Nitwit Nero's lease with the Government Services Administration and the agency's ability to manage the former president's conflicts of interest during his term in office when he was effectively on both sides of the contract as both landlord and tenant. God, can you imagine what would happen if that was a Democrat? The TV sets would blow up. Screens would melt down with the outraged howls. But you got to give it to him. He does know how to work his base. That's why he was on the Hannity Jobs program last night. You know, the life support system for a haircut. And so Hannity wanted to talk to him about Haitian migrants.
You know, you were last time on this program, and I think we need to put emphasis back on this, that your conversation with the leader of the Taliban before you ever discussed any deal of withdrawal was, number one, it was based on your stated threat that you would obliterate them. Do you remember exactly what you said? Because I have a source that says you were brutal to them. And that you said you would destroy them, you would destroy their province, you would destroy it, and it would be, everybody in the area would be dead. Did you?
Everybody would be dead. Everybody would bleed.
But then, you know, nobody really believed that. I'm sure the Taliban didn't.
Say that?
So what I said, and I had a very strong conversation, I said, I hate to start the conversation this way, but that's the way it is. And I said we would do serious, serious harm to them if they killed any of our soldiers or any American citizen.
You know,
yeah, how'd that work? But that was just a little, raw red meat for the morons, the maggots. But, well, when it comes to just outright racism, there's nobody better than the son of a Klansman.
And, you know, there's one other thing that nobody talks about. So we have hundreds of thousands of people flowing in from Haiti. Haiti has a tremendous AIDS problem. AIDS is a step beyond.
Well, I'll be dipped. Because you know who else has a tremendous AIDS problem? West Virginia. We are one of the HIV hotspots, if not the HIV hotspot in the United States of America, largely because of Republicans who oppose things like needle exchanges. I had no idea that we were covered up in Haitians. I'm being a smartass. I apologize. There's not much that can go wrong that hasn't gone wrong in Haiti, and, well, it's largely because of American public policy toward that sad, tormented, and put upon nation.
AIDS is a real bad problem. So hundreds of thousands of people are coming into our country. And if you look at the stats, if you look at the numbers, if you look at, just take a look at what's happening in Haiti, a tremendous problem with AIDS. many of those people will probably have AIDS, and they're coming into our country, and we don't do anything about it. We let everybody come in. Sean, it's like a death wish. It's like a death wish for our country.
God, it's almost like maybe it's a virus that came over from Asia and was ignored and ignored, and somebody said, oh, I don't know,
it'll be gone by spring. Just you wait and see. Spring will come, it'll get warm, and it'll disappear. It'll be like it was never here.
By the way, for anybody who's paying attention, the AIDS problem, HIV problem in Haiti is about 2%. Hell, it may be higher than that in Huntington, West Virginia. Oh, well. Yeah. Then there's Florida. From Science Magazine, Miami is the epicenter of HIV/AIDS in the United States. According to Mario Stevenson, a virologist with a thick Scottish brogue who heads the Infectious Disease Department at the University of Miami Miller School of Medicine, there's no abatement in our upward slope. Mm-hmm. Fort Lauderdale, Orlando, and Jacksonville are also all in the top 10 U.S. cities for new HIV diagnoses. And then, like I said, there's West Virginia. Haiti? Asks Matt in San Francisco. 45 seems to be living in the 80s. Please shuffle off the stage, Grandpa. That would be, hey, that's Grandpa Kliegel to you, Matt. Right. So that's enough of that. And before we go to the group, and might as well go ahead and connect, let's keep up with our daily selection from the Herman Cain Award winners. Mm-hmm. This is one of the saddest ones I've seen. This is a cranky old right-wing daddy who posted memes like, if your state reopens before you think it should, you can still stay home while everyone else goes out. It's a little thing we like to call freedom. And then back on November the 3rd of 2020, he posted, I voted, so I can stop wearing my mask now, or are we waiting for the official masks aren't necessary announcement tomorrow? And then, COVID tests are unreliable with a strong chance of false positives. And then a meme with a photograph of some skinny dude with a bushy beard and big old buggy sunglasses and, of course, tats all over. Liberal privilege. One, believing you have the right to control other people's lives. Two, believing you have the right to never hear other opinions. Three, believing that when you're offended, others have to care. Four, believing that there are two sets of rules, one for you and one for everyone else. Then by February 20th of this year, so if hydroxychloroquine is now okay, what does that tell you about the lying fact checkers? Or a meme with a picture of Brad Pitt being very, very drunk, saying, it's been 12 months. Shouldn't all the non-mask wearers be dead by now? Or Daddy also posted a picture of a face mask flying from a flagpole, and it was slugged, the flag of slavery. And then by April 3rd, he was posting a picture of the F in Facebook in a white circle on a red armband on a black jacket. Dear Facebook, it is not your job to fact-check our posts. You're a platform, not a publisher. Signed, everyone on Facebook. April 23rd, it was, terrified of corona? Then stay in your house. But stop demanding your neighbors live in the same fear you chose for yourself. May 15th, it's past time in a meme that shows someone holding a butane lighter under a mask. May 22nd, a picture of a building tipping over being held up by timbers, or maybe actually these are steel girders. Government trying to keep their COVID story up. On June 7th, he posted, humanity is splitting into two groups. Those who accept the propaganda and want to be controlled, and those who see through the propaganda and want to be free. Which one are you? June the 25th. Seven phone calls from the state and three text messages in the past 18 hours telling me to be sure to get lots of rest to get over COVID. If they'd quit calling, maybe I could sleep. But he had a son. He had a son who on July the 7th, and I'm going to read all of this. On July the 7th posted the following. Over the past 2 weeks, my father has been battling COVID. For the past 2 weeks, any time he's not been hooked up to a machine, he's felt like he was suffocating. He's had several moments where he's panicked, unable to breathe, passing out. He's been hooked up to one breathing machine after another, each one more powerful than the last because he can't get enough oxygen. For his family, it's been a constant roller coaster. Yesterday, his O2 sat was up and there was a lot of positivity. Last night, he witnessed the patient next door die from COVID. Today, he was sedated and placed on a ventilator. Today, I told him that I loved him just in case he never got off that ventilator. I didn't tell him goodbye. I couldn't. Editorially, this is the hell that families go through. He's got a sane son, but he's a COVID-denying idiot. The daddy. Now there's nothing for me to do except wait, the boy says. I can't be there. I wouldn't be allowed into the COVID unit. His last text was, I'm not going to make it out of this. My father went under thinking he was going to die, and I couldn't even be there to comfort him. He had to do it alone. I couldn't even call him. He hasn't been able to talk on the phone for a week now. It's possible that my last words to my father were sent via text message, and I don't even know if he had a chance to read them. Over the past year and a half, I've been arguing with my father, trying to convince him to take COVID more seriously. He was one of those people who didn't believe it was a big deal. Well, congratulations to me, because I was right, and my reward for being right is watching my father get worse and worse from miles away. It infuriates me to still see these conspiracy theory anti-vax lunatics out there convincing people to not get the vaccine for one stupid nonsensical reason after another. So hear it from someone who's had to deal with it. When you die from COVID, you do it all alone, unable to breathe, while your family's miles away, dealing with the consequences of your decision. On July 18th, that post, by the way, was July the 7th. On July 18th, his son says, I'm truly grateful for all the people who have contributed to my father's recovery thus far. We've had 20 donations so far and have raised $3,000. The money being donated is making a real difference, with the first withdrawal being used to pay his mortgage on August 1st. As for Dad, he's still on the ventilator and he's still sedated. However, yesterday he was told to open his eyes and take a picture for his son. He was coherent enough to take the photo. We're confident now that he'll recover, but it is becoming clear that this will be a very slow and long-term recovery. Please, if you can't donate, continue to show your support via Facebook, texts, and shares. He needs to know people are out there praying for him. August 8th, a picture of the man in his hospital room. A healthcare professional treating him, gowned and gloved. This guy's lucky to be able to talk still. It's not Daddy. It's some other guy from ABC News. This guy's lucky to be able to talk still. My father still cannot speak, and we have to try to either read lips or interpret his mouth movements. Then another lengthy post, August the 15th, yesterday, August 14th, 2021. My father passed away. I understand this comes as a shock to many who have been following his progress. It was a shock to us as well. Dad has had steady improvement since my last update. Such great improvements that... I guess Mom and I started visiting long-term acute care facilities. We were told he might be moved out of the hospital by Monday if his paperwork was completed in time. I was waiting to post another update until Dad was moved to a long-term care facility. We were starting to tell people how and when to visit him once he was out of the hospital. On Friday, he started to get agitated, thinking that he was going to be on a machine the rest of his life. Dad was always very independent and strong-willed. He calmed when I explained to him that after being in the hospital since June, he was days away from being taken off the vent. He would go to a long-term acute care facility for a few weeks before doing his rehab in Huntsville. This is either Alabama or Texas. Dad was very excited about the possibility of being moved to blank to be near us. On Wednesday morning, we were informed that Dad's lungs had degraded significantly in the 48 hours since I'd last seen him. He was no longer on minimum vent support. He was getting the max support he could from the vent, but was still unable to keep his O2 saturation up. The next several days were a roller coaster, but on Friday we saw slight improvements, so when I went to the hospital Saturday morning, I did not expect it to be my last moment with him. When I got to his room Saturday morning, the nurses were repositioning him in the bed in preparation for an X-ray. Normally, Dad would grimace in pain when they moved him, even when sedated. This time, he just stared blankly. His sedatives were already at lowered levels because his heart rate had been dropping, and my aunt had been on FaceTime, and they were trying to get any response out of my father, but couldn't. The doctor then pulled me to the side to warn me that I may not get much of a reaction from him. With his O2 saturation so low, they were worried about brain damage. However, when Auntie and I walked into his hotel room and I said, "Hey, Papa," his eyes immediately found mine. It gave me hope. I said, "There you are, Papa. Hey, I need your O2 set to increase." He raised his eyebrows and gave me a, "No, duh," look. I smiled, but his O2 didn't increase, and his heart rate kept falling. So I pulled up a chair. They had Little League Baseball playing on his TV. We sat and we watched it. I reminded him of the times we'd play ball at the park by the school. I even reminded him of when we broke a school window with a baseball. He raised his eyebrows in acknowledgement as I talked. We eventually just sat there in silence and watched Little League. I held his hand while his heart rate and blood pressure continued to drop. At one point, I looked up and wiped a tear from his eye. Soon after, the nurse came by and closed the doors to his room to give us privacy. An unnamed person hugged me as I said, "I love you, Papa." And he gave me a slight eyebrow raise. His heart rate continued to slow until he just went away altogether. I told him I loved him and reminded him that he was my favorite father. The doctor came in and pronounced him dead at 11:39 a.m. Since his passing, I've continued to receive an incredible amount of support from people I don't even know but who knew my father. I want to again thank all of you for your support throughout all of this. His GoFundMe raised enough to support his expenses while he was in the hospital and will now be used to cover any costs associated with his passing. I greatly appreciate everyone who helped financially, either via cash donations, GoFundMe, or paying his bills. Thank you to my medical friends and family for coaching me through the process and helping me better understand what my dad was experiencing. I'd also like to thank individuals like Blank and Blank for being with Dad when his family couldn't be there. At least one of those two women saw him every day in the hospital. I felt my dad's love through all the people he's crossed paths with, and I'm proud to call myself his son because of the community that's followed him. My dad had such a love for people in life. He always had a joke or a good story to tell, and he always had the craziest things happen to him. So I have one more ask. If you have a good story, please share it with me. My father had a large impact on the people in this area, and it warms my heart that he made such a difference. His respiratory therapist at the hospital even pulled me aside and told me that he remembered from his senior pictures. He brought humor and light to everyone he met. He was great with kids, and I know he would have been an absolutely wonderful grandfather. It saddens me to know that my kids will never know what they're missing. and they live streamed his funeral. And on August 21st, this individual who begged his father to take it seriously, who watched as others killed his father. Today I bury my father. And as I get on Facebook this morning, I'm still seeing my Facebook friends posting misinformation about COVID-19. You are the reason my father is dead. Every one of you who peddle the nonsense, conspiracy bullshit. So keep posting. That way, I know who to block. And by the way, there's a black. There's a photo of the guy with his eyes and nose blacked out. His hair is still brown. He was a young man. And it's a heartbreaking story that is probably, that no doubt has been repeated tens of thousands of times across this country. As family members begged their loved ones to please take it seriously. And of course, they're on Facebook with their family members, and they see the ignorance and the toxic stupidity and the viciousness. And so this young guy knew where the blame lay, and he cannot be blamed for having pointed it out. How do you even begin to deal with people like that? Block and move on. What happens? But these are small towns. What happens when you see them on the street? What do you do? Bet I know how he voted, Dad. And the list of accessories before the fact to his death extends all the way to the White House. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Jude. Thank you, dear Jude. Jude has answered Ralph's challenge. So now we're on to Rico and DeBerg's challenge. We got $100. And if we can, $100 challenge, if that gets met, Rico adds another 100. Which means it's actually a two for, not a doubling, but a tripling challenge. It would be great if we could meet that. In the meantime, let's run over to the old holler tree where we keep the extraordinary, ordinary round table. Sparky's there. Hey, Sparky.
Hey, Robin, way to set the mood.
Yeah, I know. I'm a real buzzkill, aren't I?
Oh, you see that picture I posted, didn't it?
Yeah, Grady. Chat. Yeah, Grady on the mat in the man cave.
Yeah, well, he decided to jump up on the layout table, so I moved his bed up there now.
Aw.
So he's at altitude now, so he could stare out.
Nice.
Crazy.
He looks like he's living a life of indolent boredom and absolute canine comfort.
Oh yeah, but you should have seen him yesterday.
Yeah.
He helped me locate a rat trap that I'd forgot about.
Oh wow.
With the rat still alive in it.
Oh.
So he wanted to get after it, but there was a box in the way, blocking him. I tried to pull it out at first, and that's when I found out it was alive. It started moving.
Ew!
I got it handled. I forgot that I put that trap over there like 6-8 months ago. Finally caught something.
You think you got them all, or?
No, I never get them. Never have them all. but I just keep setting them out.
Yeah, I mean, but those are out. Those are in the man cave, not in the house.
No, they're in the man cave. It's easy to get into. I just take them out, throw them out in the pasture for vulture food. I mean, they had them come from the pasture to begin with, so back they went. I wanted to ask you, did you see the video of the week that's been going around? The homeless guy.
Yeah. Because I got the vaccine, you dumbass. That was a beautiful moment.
You had to hear her from the loudspeaker saying, "Where are all the homeless people laying around? You don't see them, do you?" And that's when he said, "Because I got vaccinated." He's pushing a shopping cart. It was on Jimmy Kimmel. It's been all over the place. Such is life everywhere. You got your anti-vaxxer nuts.
Oh, that Herman Cain Award subreddit is just, I mean, I've read a bunch of them, and some of them don't really, because it's like, well, you know, fuck around, find out. But my heart breaks for that boy in that one that I read. That's why I read it, because Jesus. To sit there and watch other people kill people you love? What the fuck, Sparky?
Did you start the Herman Cain Award?
No, I didn't.
Oh, you heard it from somebody. I thought you started it, because I keep seeing it pop up every now and again now. And tweets and stuff like that I read.
Oh, it's huge. It's gotten huge traction. Somebody started it over on Reddit, and I just sort of harvest one every day. Because there has to be a record. We have to understand, because it's one thing to just sort of talk about it in general, but to realize the depth of the willful ignorance and the toxic homicidal or suicide pact mania in this country. God. And, you know, for everybody who has busted their ass trying to stay safe from this and trying to do everything right, to realize that there's a third or more of this country, it's like, nah, fuck it. It ain't real. I'm smarter than the scientists. Jesus.
Then they had to show that. That nurse, that colored nurse from New York,
mm-hmm.
that was the first one to get the vaccine. I seen a picture of her getting her booster the other day.
Good.
I think she was on Good Morning America again or something like that. So, I got a couple more weeks before I can get mine.
Well, I'm grateful to have mine. I felt like I really needed it because, they all take 2 weeks to get active. I got mine. Agnes got hers. We both got our flu shots. And so I guess here as of now, I'm kind of going into hibernation. You know what I mean? Or I don't want to say quarantine because I don't have anything to quarantine from. But I'm just gonna reduce my social interactions beyond absolute necessities of doing things like going to the grocery store.
Well, I love my grocery delivery. I don't know. I couldn't go back to going to the grocery store.
Oh, I don't think I could get it here as rural as I am. Most I could hope for would be to go to. Kroger's or Wally World and get delivery out to the car.
Then I was checking my DoorDash last night and showed a new restaurant that's right down the road across the street from the fairgrounds where I picked your son up at.
Yeah.
And It was listed on DoorDash. So I click on it, open up their site. There's no menu there yet. They got all the condiments listed that you could buy extra. No menu. I thought, geez, should I call them and tell them that DoorDash doesn't have their information or what?
Oh. What'd you do?
I didn't do anything yet. I was going to order breakfast this morning from them because I heard they make real good biscuits and gravy. But since I couldn't access the menu, I was shit out of luck. So hopefully they'll post the menu pretty soon.
That would be helpful.
And I discovered a new bank of Tesla chargers this week.
What do you mean you discovered a new bank of them?
Well, I'd never seen them before.
Oh.
I never go to that area of town.
You mean like car chargers?
Yeah. Whole row of them, and there was two Teslas parked there, too, getting charged. I had to go get a new phone because I dropped my phone. So we got two Verizon stores in town. So I went to the Verizon store I've been to before get a phone because it was near the grocery store. But they were too crap packed with people there. So I went to the other Verizon store in this other shopping center that I never go to anymore. And I parked around the corner, and then I looked down the fence line. Here's all these Tesla chargers, and Interstate 5 is just right behind them. You know, the off-ramp coming off the freeways from the north is just right behind where all these car chargers are through the cyclone fence. Because I knew there was a set of them on the other side of this street at a motel. Well, on the other side of the freeway.
Oh, well, you know, one of these days, we'll have all electric cars. But, like, in a place like West Virginia, there's this thing going on right now. Three of our major coal-fired power plants have to be significantly upgraded in order to continue operating past 2028, I think it is. And so, because they're just they're just brassy as hell, the power company has Appalachian Power said, you know, we don't want to pay for that ourselves, and we don't want to go to no frack gas power generation. We sure don't want no fucking solar. So we want everybody in West Virginia to pay for our upgrades so we can keep burning coal. And, of course, the Public Service Commission here is as crooked as a dog's hind leg. So, yeah, I'm going to get my power bill jacked up to pay for an out-of-date, every time the power goes out, I say, you know, the antiquated, rickety, coal-fried power grid.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get to pay extra for that. So wonderful.
I was going to say, I can see where California will lead the nation in electric vehicles in the next couple of years because the price of gas keeps going up. Nobody wants to buy a gas car. It's $4.29 right now here in town.
$4.29? Okay, I don't feel so bad. I'm a buck 20 cheaper than you.
Roger's saying in the chat, Oregon won't be far behind. He's thinking of buying an electric vehicle.
You know, oddly enough, it's hard to get one around. Well, I mean, you can't have dealerships or anything around here. But I'm seeing more. I'm seeing you know, 3, 4, 5 Teslas running around.
So, where are the charging stations?
There are, well, I think most people are charging at home, but the Sheetz convenience store over in Beckley, both of them, or all three of them, I think, have charger banks. But mostly, and there's one at like the Nissan dealership, but mostly people just charge at home because, you know, the range on those Teslas is not shabby. I just wonder how they handle the winters here in the cold weather.
Oh, and they're using, in the Bay Area, they're using Teslas to deliver pot.
Well, of course. They're, you know, the Bay Area lives in the future. While here in West Virginia, we live in the past.
I was watching the Pat McAfee show this morning, and he's doing, he's a commentator on SmackDown Raw for the WWE. He used to play for the Baltimore Colts as a punter.
Yeah, he kicked for the Mountaineers.
Yeah. Well, anyway, he's in San Jose for the SmackDown tonight. And so as soon as he got in, he wanted to go get some edibles. So the closest place to get him was going to close at 9. And he was able to get there, and he stocked up. And then the guy at the store says, oh, we'll deliver too. So he puts in another order for in the morning. He gets delivered, and he goes out, and he looks, and the gal's driving a Tesla.
Great work if you can get it.
Yeah, but then he's got a whole bunch of stuff, and he says, well, I'm not going to try and take any of these back on the plane, but he's not flying commercial.
Yeah, but he still has to go through the airport.
Yeah, anyway, he says, I'll have to eat them all. So if I'm flying high tonight on the TV show,
you'll know why. Well, let's check in with the gang and see if anybody's got anything to add to the conversation. Ron,
I have a testimonial if you want one.
Well, testify, Scott, testify.
The one and only time that I used cannabis in an edible form.
you saw the dark side of your brain?
No, even worse. I forget the year. I guess it was 2010, 2008, something like that. I went and had lunch at McDonald's because I wanted a more or less full stomach. And then I went over to the mall and bought my ticket for the film, the Oliver Stone film, W. Okay? So I had the brownie before the movie started out on the bench in the mall. And I ate half of it, and I waited and waited and waited, and nothing seemed to happen. So I ate the rest of it. So I'm sitting in there, and about a third of the way through the movie, it hit me all at once. And I swear to the good Lord up above, I think I was hallucinating before the end of that show. I'm telling you, don't ever do that.
Well, and the stories, Scott, of people who do that are legion. Because what happens is, you know, if you're used to smoking the stuff,
yeah,
it, you know, gets active pretty quickly. But if it has to go through your digestive tract, that is a longer journey.
Yeah, it creeps up on you like cheap imported undershorts.
I mean,
Jesus. But never again. If I ever imbibe again, it's going to be the old-fashioned way. I'll roll it or pack it in a pipe or something like that. I was actually afraid there for a while. I mean, I was having palpitations.
Oh, yeah.
And blurred vision.
And it depends entirely on the strain involved. I mean, eons ago.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about when dinosaurs roamed the earth. I had a pal on an archaeological dig who came back to camp one day after a weekend at home. He had to go and resupply. And he'd done a little baking. and he didn't bake his brownies in a flat sheet pan like ordinary people. No, no, hell no. He baked his brownies in a muffin tin, so they were big. and you know, kind of like a streusel swirl, he would crumble hash into the batter.
Oh God!
And it would get just warm enough to do the right thing. And he said, "Here you go, Mr. Robin, try one of these." And I did. Well, doggies. About an hour and a half later, I was just wandering around behind little animals. You know, just like
talking to them.
Just like Jim Stafford. Just like Jim Stafford said in Wildwood Weed.
Were they talking to you?
Hoo-wee. And that was the last time.
Yeah.
And I'm in, you know, so I very much live the life sanitary now. I want to be in good shape. Not as good a shape as I'd like to be in, but I want to be in good shape. And since I quit smoking, I can't stand to smoke the stuff. Because smoking anything is like, you know, those are lovely noises to make during the dinner hour, by the way, if you're a professional broadcaster. Yeah, right. And so. Yeah.
All right, all right. We don't need a chorus.
I mean, I've noticed in the year that I've been a non-smoker that even when I've fired up the smoker to make food, it used to be I could stand downwind of the thing and that beautiful hickory smoke would billow over me and I'd be like, ah, this is lovely. And instead, it's like I go running away from it like I'm fleeing a burning building.
Jeez. Yeah, I noticed that after I quit cigarettes. If I'd be standing waiting for a bus and somebody even 20 feet away was smoking a regular cigarette, it was like, yeah. How could I ever have done that?
Don't make Sparky lightsaber you for the noises, Scott. Okay, don't get on thin ice.
I got out
of the car yesterday, and I was parked between two giant pick'em up trucks, and I didn't know which one was the diesel. But I got out of the car. Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah.
Because the diesel fumes were just over with. It's weird what happened. If you've never smoked, you've never experienced this sensation. But if you're a smoker who quits, everything changes.
Yeah, I know.
Sense of smell comes back. Sense of taste is elevated. That's probably why there's more of me than I would like there to be. And I think I've been eating my feelings along the way a little bit too, but you know, that's to be expected.
Somebody whipping up a batch in the background.
Yeah, it sounds like they may very well be. Let's see. I got to check in on some email. Oh, by the way, thanks to an anonymous friend, Rico's Love Dan Fisher challenge has been met. Thank you, Rico, and thank you to our anonymous friend. And that leaves us at the halfway point of the program with $650 to go to finish fundraising. That means there's $50 left to go on Wednesday, and then Thursday, and today, and we would actually have a community-made miracle if we can raise $650. So that's where we are. Other notes: Tesla's Ron in Raleigh says you can't sling a dead cat in Raleigh without hitting a Tesla. They're everywhere, and that reminds me of something that Brother Deacon Asa said in a remark last night, and I thought it a telling comment. Brother Deacon Asa said when we were talking about Elon Musk and going to space and all of that fun stuff, he said something about this is why. Yeah, Elon Musk is what happens when one of the Gamergate assholes becomes the second richest man in the world. This is why I will not buy an electric car until Chevy or Ford put out a compelling one. Fuck Tesla and the horsepower they rode in on. And you know, the more I find out about Elon Musk, I used to think he was a visionary. Now I'm pretty sure he's just a dick. So there's that. Lee in New York says West Virginia living in the past. Does West Virginia still use whale oil? Well, if Joe Manchin could figure out a way to broker it, Lee, there would be sailing ships leaving from the port of Charleston. And I don't mean South Carolina. Thank you very kindly to Jeremy. Jeremy's got us started. Well, we are now $30 away from Done with Wednesday. That's fantastic. Thank you, Jeremy. Thank you a ton, my friend. Let's see. Let's roll around the room and see if anybody's got anything to say. Hey, I see our buddy John from Central PA. I don't know if he's up to talking or not, but when I see the green dot, I just jump right in.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Joe Manchin's seriously under your skin, isn't he?
Oh, my God, yes. That guy is so full of shit. Everything that comes out of his mouth is absolute mealy-mouth horse shit that is absolutely can be easily debunked and disproved. And he just boldly does it and tries to act like a nice guy while doing it. And, you know, like his voice is real soothing. Like, I love his voice, like, actually, which is kind of ironic, right? But his voice, I do love his voice, though. And it's soothing, and it's like, you know, relaxes you when he talks. But he's being a mealy-mouthed, two-faced asshole when he's talking, though, every time. Like, every time that guy opens his mouth, he really is the old, like, he personifies that old, like, what was it, saying, expression, that whenever a politician is lying is when they open their mouths or something to that effect. He is like a person. He's basically a living image of that. But I don't know. There's just other things that have been bugging me lately. I mean, like, I'm sick of that. Him. I'm sick of, you know, judges allowing these fucking insurrectionist, seditionist assholes get away with everything they're getting away with. Now there's another guy a judge is letting go from New York City to go to Pittsburgh to see a football game. The judge is letting them do that, you know. And it's just like,
oh, I know. Wow. I've got one. There's one of these a day. Remember the pouty one. The nobody will come to my beauty parlor lady from somewhere in Taliban, Indiana, from a couple of nights ago. Well,
yes.
Maggot Robert Reeder. Had a hissy in court today, or as the copy says, grew emotional. Now, bear in mind, he pled guilty to misdemeanor, unlawfully parading, demonstrating, and picketing the Capitol. And, he was overwhelmed by being, by the whole process, and he was overwhelmed by getting caught. He said, I sincerely apologize for my shameful actions. I committed unacceptable actions for being there. I know it was really tough for the police. I've always supported the police 110%. And I've lost my job. And he started to cry. I'm radioactive. No one wants to hire me. I just have to Google my name. I can't be a Boy Scout master no more, and I can't coach sports no more. And my church told me to stay out and not be a distraction. Yeah, there's a happy ending to this, though. The judge said, it's become evident to me in the riot cases, many of the defendants who are pleading guilty are not truly accepting responsibility. They seem to be trying to get this out of the way as quickly as possible. And then handed him, Mr. Reeder, 3 months in jail. I was kind of surprised. Damnedest thing.
Now, that wasn't pretend jail, was it? That was real, the real deal.
No, that's real jail.
All right. Go, judge.
And well, so,
at least you got that. Yeah. Yeah, I'm not impressed with the justice system.
Well, and let's understand things. Just like that Herman Cain Award, some of the things that he posted. Joe Biden is not my president. And that is just all with capital letters for every word. Then it was Joe Biden, all caps, is not my president. all caps, stop the steal! Patriot Party of the USA! Republicans who aren't afraid! The silent majority! Hop on the Trump train! Now, he was a member of every one of those Facebook groups. And so he's actually going to, I'm amazed, he's going to see some, he's going to see some jail time. And the prosecutor said, no, 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 don't buy this. He's not remorseful. Well, darn.
When you find out where he's going to be spending the sentence, get me the address. I want to send him some gummies.
God almighty.
A little attitude adjustment for that poor fella.
So, I mean, gosh, I'm sorry he decided to participate in an insurrection to overturn constitutional governance in the United States. I mean, that sucks for him, doesn't it? But you know what there wasn't any evidence of? Anybody putting a gun to his head and making him go.
Yeah, true.
You better go on into that riot or I'm going to blow your brains out. Nope. No evidence of that at all.
Pathetic.
Yeah, I'm not exactly all broke up. We must be getting, I guess we need those improvements to the power grid because we're getting some power surges here. I'll be dipped.
No shit.
Yeah, never a dull moment.
You should have been here the other night, Robin. Oh, man. I grew up back east and spent 20 years in the Midwest, so I know a little bit about thunderstorms. I was actually sitting here fearful.
Well, Tracy was telling me about the same thing, that was some wild shit that came after you guys the other night.
Oh, man.
She said it pretty much went on all night.
I was watching it on radar, and it finally did calm down. But I don't scare easily either. But I was actually frightened because we got some old palm trees in the front yard, and I sure as hell don't want, you know. Hell, there was news film the other night of a fucking palm tree on fire that had gotten struck by lightning. Yeah.
I'm about to ask you a question, and if you give the answer that I'm halfway convinced you probably will, I'm gonna come out there and we're gonna have a problem.
No.
Because I asked Tracy and she didn't know the answer. Where did the storm come from? And this is the part of the program, Scott, where you do not say the sky. Okay, I just want to be clear about that.
Oh no, I know better than to do that. As near as I can figure from the NBC7 weather radar, it came from outer space. No, it came from.
I knew you couldn't resist.
The water, you know, the Pacific or something, and swung up through Mexico in a northwesterly direction.
Well, that's what I was wondering. Was it some sort of remnant of a typhoon or something?
Oh, probably. Probably. Yeah. I'm telling you, and I would say that's the lovely thing about radar on your phone. You can sit and watch it in real time. So at least you know when the clear spots are coming and when the noisy, scary parts are leaving. But anyway, yeah, it was you know, the remnants of a Pacific storm, and it's weather. I don't know why I get so upset, but I was like being a 4-year-old again. Oh, the angels are bowling, my son. Fear not. Yeah, right.
Exactly. Hey, I need to send out a thank you to Christopher. Thank you, Christopher, so much. Christopher just got us down, finished off Wednesday's fundraising. So the prayer meeting plate finally got done being passed, and that's awful.
How far from a miracle?
We are $600 away from a miracle, John Bredebo.
$600.
And Christopher Young said, in regard to Mr. Reeder, who pled guilty and was sentenced today, go, Judge, shit on him.
Yeah. Actually, Robin, I was thinking, you know, after that little number he produced, the sad song, he'll have plenty of time to practice building world's smallest violin.
It's teeny tiny and microscopic. Yeah. How are you, John Brittabo?
I am hanging in there every day, Robin. How in the hell are you?
It's been a rough week, and it got really rough and ugly today.
Oh hell! You sound like the week I've had. What's up with you?
My healthcare provider for my surgery did everything right.
Does not begin well.
Did everything right and submitted my pre-authorization packet. And this morning, someone on the other side of the planet told me that it had been denied.
It had been denied.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the insurance is denying your procedure.
Yes. And
that's bullshit.
No, it's absolute unmitigated bullshit. It is ridiculous.
Are you paying for the insurance?
Oh yeah, $1,500 a month.
How much?
$1,500 per month.
Are you shitting me? God knows. That's sickening.
I bought this policy because, among other things, this particular company was reviewed as being one of the best insurance companies in the country for LGBTQ people to work at.
Right.
And
Now where does this leave you?
Fucked.
Well, that's a common.
And not in a good way?
So you're going to have to postpone? What's the deal?
I don't know. And that's why I'm not in a good place. Anyway, they were supposed to pay 90% with a 10% copay on my part. And it had a very low deductible. And it basically doubled.
On what grounds did they deny the request?
Well, it's a heck of a story. All of mine are, John. You know that.
Well, of course. Of course it is.
So I spent about 4 hours trying to get through customer service.
Right.
And I finally got somebody here in the United States. And we talked for a while, and I said, okay, so, and this individual said, you know, we're just customer service. I don't know why they denied it. I can just say that it was denied. I said, so you can't come up with the file. You can't find any notes. No, we don't have access to that. I said, well, who would have access to that? And she said, that would be the authorization department. I said, are they just down the hall from you? And she said, no, sir. It was sir, sir, Mr. sir, sir. No matter how many times I told them who I was, what I am. Yeah. And so that made it extra double plus good fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Isn't it pleasant dealing with? Yeah.
Yeah. And so I said, okay, so they don't, I said, okay, so do you have a phone number? Well, let me look around and see if I can find out. And so I'm on hold for another 15 minutes, and these are all extended holds, hoping that I'll just hang up.
Yeah, that's their wish. Yeah,
it's called the lumpet factor. But I didn't. And she eventually came back and said, "No, we don't have a number anywhere around here for the authorization department." But I can give you
The one that told you to say no?
Right. So she said, but I can give you an address in Parkersburg, West Virginia, where you can mail your appeal. I said, should
I? In other words, fuck off.
Do I need to deliver it by horseback? I mean, I actually didn't say that. I'm really.
No, but you were tempted to.
I'm really professional in these calls. And I don't take it out on these people because they just have shitty jobs with a shitty company, and they're just trying to feed their families.
I try to keep that in mind.
Yeah.
I really do.
Sometimes it's really difficult.
It is.
But I went away.
But you know, as soon as you go off track, that then they have a reason to just dismiss you.
And so
once
right, exactly, and they can hang up on you. No. Yeah. And I've got a recording. And at the end, she said, "Well, you know, thank you for calling, and I'm glad to have been able to help you today." I said, "No, let's clear something up. You didn't help me at all." Well, I gave you an she said, "Well, I gave you an address." I said, "I don't care. That doesn't help. That wasn't helping. I told you specifically what I needed in order for you to help. And you did not, could not, or would not help. So good day." Click.
There you go.
And then digging around, I finally found a phone number for the authorization department.
Right.
And I called them, and the call connected at noon. And at 12:50 p.m., a representative came online. Because I guess they'd seen that I wasn't going to hang up. Let's take the call.
We got one on the line that won't let go.
And so that was another round of sirs and misters. And I finally got them to the point where they'd say, just call me Robin.
Yeah.
Okay, Robin. And I did not lose.
As they roll their eyes.
Yeah, I didn't lose my shit. And I said, "Here's the reference number. Please open the file and tell me why I was denied." And so she finally did. And I found out. And I wanted to go outside John Bredevaux and eat dirt and run rabbits. Some doctor, doctor that works for this insurance company, who probably could not successfully put a Band-Aid on a cadaver, looked at all of the pre-cert information, all the hoop jumping I've done, you know, flaming barbed wire hoops, as Scott likes to say.
Right.
And, you know, all my letters from all the medical and behavioral health professionals saying she needs this, she's got gender dysphoria, this is life-saving treatment, this is necessary treatment, blah, blah, blah. And this genius from the Draw Spunky School of Medicine.
Well renowned.
Yes. Said, "No, we're denying this claim because," wait for it, "this can be done." Now, I'm not trying to gross anybody out. I've tried to be open and help because people are curious and I want to help. I want to be a helper here. We're talking about vaginoplasty, clitoroplasty, and labiaplasty.
And you can do this at,
and
don't you dare say home.
No.
I wouldn't put it past the asshole.
Dr. Thumbfingers.
At home in your spare time.
Whoa, wait for it, Scott.
All right.
Dr. Thumbfingers said this needs to be done. And the way she explained it to me was, "Well, there's hospitalization in this pre-authorization. And our doctor says this can be done on an outpatient basis."
Are you shitting me? Outpatient.
Yes, outpatient vaginoplasty.
Ain't happening.
Can't be done. This stupid motherfucker apparently is pals with that member of the Ohio legislature who thinks that you can harvest a fertilized ovum from an ectopic pregnancy in the fallopian tubes of a woman and reimplant it in the uterus. It's that level of stupid.
Did they think it was like 1 hour Martinizing in by nine?
Yes,
by
exactly,
five?
Scott. It's 1 hour vaginizing.
Jesus.
Good Lord. That's ridiculous. That is ridiculous. So why didn't they just deny the hospitalization part and continue with the surgery part?
Well, there was really no answer for that. I said, "Do you have any other notes?" "No, that's what I got." "And they just denied it because it's an outpatient procedure." I said, "In what world?"
It's not. Lord have mercy. This is in Alabama.
Well, no, this insurance company's in Pennsylvania.
Oh, they're in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
I wonder where the doctor lives.
She would not give me the name of the doctor.
No.
Because I think the doctor's probably not really a doctor.
No.
It's probably, you know, some clerk typist who just goes,
you know, we've talked about that in the general healthcare field. Denied. That's what insurance companies do.
Yeah.
They take your money and then they try their very best not to pay for shit when you need it.
And so he is either in West Virginia, Pennsylvania, or Delaware.
Ain't it sad?
Yeah, I mean, so that narrows it down.
We're gonna have to come up with a plan B on something.
Well, plan B is my surgeon, who lives a life of indolent boredom and doesn't do much of anything apparently, is supposed to get on the phone with this refugee from a veterinary hospital, at best, and convince him that this really is an inpatient procedure that requires 5 to 7 days, possibly more, of hospitalization. But the problem here is that the surgery is scheduled for 1 month from tomorrow.
Well, that's not going to happen now.
And so,
because of this bullshit,
I've been kind of battling the reality that ain't gonna happen, and I'm not okay.
I don't know how it is down there. You know, the person I know personally, it was 4 days in the hospital.
Yeah,
it was 4 days, and I was surprised. It was in Austin, Texas, and the most liberal city in Texas, our capital, and pretty much a pretty smooth, easy procedure. No problems.
Yeah.
In other words, you know, I mean, we didn't have any problems or anything.
I know. Yeah. I mean, being older, it may be a little bit more complicated for me.
Yeah.
But
if you have your doctor saying that this is a life, you know.
Yeah, I have two MD behavioral health professionals.
Right.
And
you have to have that.
And a medical provider. And it's all there. It's all documented. And they just denied it for the fun of it. A long time ago, John, when I was just a pimply faced ex-journalist coming out of CNN into law school, on the first day of the first year of the first day of the first semester of the first year of law school, we had a class called torts. And we had this really, really vibrant, gruff ex-Marine of a torts professor. And on the first day, and he was one of the first classes you took. And so there's a room full of like 60 eager young law students.
Right.
And he asked, okay, everybody raise your hand who already has a summer internship with, and he rattled off the names of a few law firms in West Virginia that do insurance work. And this one particularly lovely young lady raised her hand and he said, "You, for the rest of the semester, when I point at you, you say one thing." "Okay." "You say, when I point at you, we don't pay."
"We don't pay."
And so what he would do is throughout the course of the semester, he would say, "So-and-so insurance company, blah, blah, blah." And he would lay out the facts of the program, or the facts of the case. And he'd say, "And the plaintiff was injured, blah, 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 blah. And the insurance company says," and she had to stand up and say, "We don't pay."
That is the you know.
And what
we don't have health care. We have profit care in this country. That's right. What's wrong. I've argued that point forever. Don't give a fuck about your health. They give a fuck about your wallet, what kind of insurance you got, how much money they can get.
Yeah.
Your piddly ass, well, we'll save you, maybe, maybe not. Who knows? We'll see. That's what we pay for.
Because this is not some
$1,500 a month.
Yeah.
Jesus, Robin, that's
highway robbery, extortion.
I'm a retired federal employee. My health insurance, which is a high grade LE on Blue Cross Blue Shield Texas, all this good shit. That premium plan, 300 and something dollars. No, I think it went up to 400. That's right. They had a pressure. I think I'm at 400 a month. 400 a month is what I pay for my freaking insurance that pays every freaking thing. And I'm on Medicare, so I don't pay for a damn thing when I go to the hospital. Nothing. That's bullshit. That is the difference between the government being able to negotiate with insurance companies over prices and the insurance company just saying, fuck you, give us $1,500 or you ain't got it. It's robbery. Because just in Robin's case, they're going to take your money right up in the time you need it. And then some doctor who's never even probably been on the floor of a hospital is going to sit in some office somewhere in some computer and just give out a technical reason why we're not going to pay your claim. It's his job to make up the language that they're going to tell you why we can't pay your claim. That's his whole fucking job. It's not to determine whether or not you need it. His job is to determine the language.
Oh, but understand, their denial language was not medically necessary.
Hmm. Not medically necessary for the insurance company. For your ass, yes.
Now, where it's the difference between me continuing to live or not live, I have a difference of opinion.
Yeah. And most people would. And most people would. The answer to your issue, I have no idea. You either got to take on the insurance company direct, or you've got to find another solution, i.e., you know, whatever it takes for to raise that kind of capital.
Oh, John, there's solutions and there's solutions.
Yeah. Well, if we were rich, Robin.
I know. The problem with suing the bastards is, one, they may be immune because they are a health insurance company.
Right.
Two, the Health Insurance Commissioner's Office of West Virginia is a wholly owned subsidiary of the insurance industry.
Hmm. Answer that.
Three, if I am able to sue, I might win in 5 years or 10.
Yeah, if you're lucky.
Because they have no incentive to do the right thing. All of their incentives are driven by, I don't know, shareholder prices and now, dividends. Wait a minute.
Are we talking about the healthcare industry and insurances, or are we talking about Republicans in general?
Is there a difference?
Not much. I don't think so. Money grubbing. You know.
Is there a group or organization who can step in and assist you, like advocate with you?
That's a good question.
No,
either
my doctor succeeds in convincing Dr. Mengele, or he does not.
Why are you ask this guy, maybe, how about I hold you down and let's see how fast you heal?
have you offered? I found out where the doctor is, by the way. Dr. I.P. Freely, and he lives in beautiful Trump Valley, Pennsylvania. He's got a lovely two-story house down there. But have you offered the doctor, the good doctor, a .45 caliber vasectomy? To sort of incentivize.
No, you know, they don't take kindly to that sort of thing, and the humorless people with black suits and white on white ties and talking to their wrists and shit show up in your yard.
I see, that's too bad.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you got to escalate it.
And then they take and then because I haven't had the surgery yet, they'd take me off to a men's prison, and wouldn't I be a party there? Sorry.
Although, ironically enough, in men's prison, you might actually get the surgery faster, Robin. No joke. Because in prisons, they do that shit for you because it's federally funded or state funded.
Not in West Virginia. Not in West Virginia. The ACLU is suing both the Public Employees Insurance Agency and Medicaid to make them finally cover trans health care. Because right now, they don't cover so much as a pill, let alone surgery.
I don't get how they think that it's like a drive-through. Like, okay, it's done. Boom, boom, there you go. You're done.
Because they're ignorant. Well, no, that's not true. They're not ignorant.
It's not that they're ignorant.
Their company is probably something that they look down on.
They have accounting. They have industry standard accounting practices that say that it's very good for them to do this to me.
Yes. Yes. They have lots of accountants that will tell you, yes, don't give it to them because we'll make money. Profit care. God, it's frustrating because it was one of the first subjects 5 years ago that I even started my show on. You know, Let's Kill Grandma, I think was the title of it. Fuck it. We don't need to take care of her. She's old. She's going to die anyway. What the hell we got to worry about her? Why would we spend money on keeping Grandma alive? Why would we spend money on any of the citizens out there that need a damn thing? We can keep it all. And it's just sickening. Because like I said, that's what an insurance company is made for. You look at the pay range of health insurance companies or health companies. Look at the CEO. Look at how much they're getting paid. And you tell me how many customers, how many patients, how many policies do they have to sell just to pay their fucking salary, not including the vice president of this, that, and the other, and the secretaries, the upper board, and all this other bullshit in the fucking company. How much does that all add up to? And how many people's lives is that that have to sacrifice for the altar of paying that they don't fucking deserve? It is heartbreaking. That's how come it pisses me off so much. It's because this is life. These are people's health. And you make us beg, barter for health care. And if you ain't got the money and if you ain't got insurance, tough shit, go over to the county health fair and get in line with 500 other people over there who's going to die before they get to see the doctor.
And bear in mind, these evil bastards have been paying for my transition medication all along.
So they knew it was coming. They knew what the plan was.
Yeah, yeah.
But they saw the bill.
On what sickening level do they even come into realization that, lo and behold, in this case of people with gender dysphoria, myself being one of them, they can in fact be the fucking death panels we were warned about.
Yes.
The motherfuckers
yes.
they
yes.
are.
Yes.
Yes. Because they don't care. Because they look upon you as a sinner, for one. My God, look here, you're talking about transgender. We don't do that. Jesus. All that kind of bullshit. That is the underlying mindset of so many organizations that you have to force gay or transgender people into a position to be able to work or to be able to get health care.
Well, there's a lot of people out there that want us dead. I mean, yes. John, you didn't hear it, but I had a long-form conversation with my dear friend Dan Fisher last night, and he hipped us to the content of the new Dave Chappelle special.
Right.
And that is nothing but 72 minutes of attacking the trans community and telling us that we should all be dead. We're not
How
even
lovely.
Real.
You know,
and it's not at all surprising to find out that I'm running across this, but I did everything right.
Well, for one, you live in West Virginia. You knew that was coming.
Yeah.
But you've done everything right. You've gone to the doctors. You've been evaluated. This is a dire need. And the insurance company is just going to thumb their nose and say, well, we'd like to help you out, but, you know, we can't pay that. We're not going to pay. And then with those words, it's a done deal. And where does that leave you? You know, we all know this is where you need to be. Everyone listening to this program is of the mindset that we don't have to discuss whether or not it is okay for somebody to be transgender. That's not, we already determined that shit. But with everything else, right now we got a big mask thing where everybody's getting pissed off about the mask and all this shit. Anti-vaxxers and all this fucking crap. I heard the story at the beginning of the show, by the way, Robin. That's pitiful.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking.
It's heartbreaking.
And so, it's quite all right. And I don't mean to bring people down, but I mean, I had some people asking because I said, you know, really bad, hard, rotten day. And to be fair, maybe if the program hasn't been up to snuff for the last week or so, there's a reason. Because I have not been okay. I've been a nervous wreck. I've been worried as hell. Because, see, here's the way they're playing this. And I mean, yeah, I don't tell them everything I know. You know, you don't smarten up a chump. Not that they're chumps. I mean, I'm the chump here. But I know how this game is played. And when they saw that this was a pre-certification for a procedure on November the 9th, they knew that all they had to do was run out the clock. And then, because they were in a decision process, I would lose my surgery date. And then, you know, who knows when it happens? Because it has been hard enough to get to here. And I'm not crawling up on the cross or anything like that. But the year plus that I have worked and lived and gone about in my community, gone on trips that amounted to a couple of thousand miles, have not, I mean, I'm very fortunate. I've got a wonderful community, but it has not all been beer and Skittles. It has been hard. Any trans woman, any trans man, any non-binary person who goes through this knows that it is fucking difficult. And we don't do it for shits and giggles. We do it because it's the only way we can continue to survive. Because we want to live. And
amen, baby.
And to be hit by this right now at this time. And again, I say these things not as some sort of poor, poor, pitiful me. If it's happening to me, it is happening to women like me all over the country. Fighting and begging and pleading just to stay alive. In a country, a vast number of the citizens of which would really rather we be dead. Family members that would rather we be dead.
Most of them call themselves Christian.
Yeah, and 99.9% of them call themselves Christian.
Yeah. I have a question.
Yeah.
Early in the story, you were talking about you picked this insurance carrier specifically because it had gotten good reviews in this area. That troubles me that either the reviews are not.
Oh, no, no, the LGBTQ people voted them the best insurance company to work for.
Well, I would let the people that gave them that thumbs up or whatever, I'd let them know that maybe they haven't talked to you yet, because it doesn't sound like you're getting thumbs up treatment.
Well, to be fair, it was 4 years ago. It was 2017.
Oh.
Maybe they've gotten worse since then. But, you know, this is a company that's a real heavy hitter in Pennsylvania. They're one of the largest health insurance companies in Pennsylvania. And
Well, it's worth noting when it comes to insurance companies that during the depths of the Great Depression, while a lot of banks and savings and loans went under, the Great Depression barely touched the insurance industry, so that'll give you a rough idea of the caliber of organization you're dealing with. I'm just disgusted by this, to tell you the truth. And, you know, I'm just me sitting out here listening to what you're telling me, and I can't imagine. You know, it's like a fucking kick to the solar plexus.
Yeah.
For you, I mean, Jesus, it's just horrifying. I mean, you don't need me to tell you this, but goddamn, if I can see how horrifying it is.
Oh,
and
horrible.
You into a corner. If you got a surgery date scheduled, all they've got to do is fiddle fuck around
and run out the clock.
Yeah. Jesus. God damn. Now I'm even more pissed off than I had been.
Yeah, this is, you know, this is the quarterback who kneels because the defense is out of timeouts. And you just get into victory formation and kneel and let the game end. I feel like they're trying to kill me.
It's not quite the same, Robin, at all, but misery likes company. About 7 months ago, my insurance company sent me a letter stating that they would only cover so much insulin per day from now on, which essentially dropped it by 100 units per day.
Yeah, I was going to say that amount of insulin necessary, Jeremy, was probably not the amount of insulin you need.
Right. I have a pod that holds 200 units. I'm supposed to change it every 2 days. They've essentially said it needs to last the 3 days it was supposed to from now on. And I called them up and I raised holy hell. And they said my only refuge was to have my doctor resubmit it and have it reviewed. No guarantee they'd say yes the second time around.
So they're trying to kill
you. And look, that's what I said. I point blank on the phone, I asked the lady, you realize that people fucking die. And I said just like that, people fucking die when they ration their insulin. Oh, yes, sir, I understand. I said, then what the fuck are you people doing? Oh, well, the doctors know best. I said, the fuck they don't. They're not my doctor. They didn't prescribe it. They haven't helped control my A1C for so many years. I said, you throw this in on top of COVID when it's already hard enough to eat in a place where people might have been all fucking day. And you're playing with lies. And all I got was resubmit your order through your doctor. Maybe we'll say yes.
I mean, how is that not conspiracy to commit at least manslaughter?
That and your and the way it deals with, you know, the your psychology, you know, it's like yourself.
Well, I also said, don't you realize, I said this and I've gotten one point across with a couple of my systems. I said, it's to your benefit to spend on the front end than to wait till it fucks me up in the end and costs you $1 million because I'm in the hospital in a coma or something because you morons. And somehow they see the wager between either they're not going to spend the money or I'm going to die before they spend the money as the wager.
So, I mean, and again, sorry for being a downer. I guess I've been all evening.
Not the same, but insurance companies, fuck them all.
Brahman.
Yes.
Sorry to have left the conversation momentarily. I'm going to leave for just a second. I'll be right back. I have more drama in front of my house.
Oh, my God, no.
I'll be right back.
They're back at it. Shit. Yep. God. John can't get a moment's peace.
He really needs to just have the Texas Rangers come out and finish this really quick.
Well, the Texas Rangers need to be willing to do that, and so far I think that's a no-go.
So, it's like he should say to them, hey, I've got no help through my local, so you guys need to start helping me here.
Yeah, but those guys are probably maggots too.
Yeah. Fuck the Texas Rangers. He needs to get the Pink Brigade down there to fucking stand in front of him. I'd be glad to do it. 6 foot tall, 250-pound, 50-year-old faggot. I would love to stand there.
Oh, I hate that word so much. I hate that word so much. Not picking on you, but that, oh, God, you know.
Hey, listen, I have license.
Yes, you do. You do. You do.
And I'm not saying it to be mean. I'm just saying it.
Well, you're saying it to let people know you mean business. Because if you're using that terminology, and you is one, then that these people ought to steer a wide berth. Because you don't fuck around.
No, I don't fuck around. And I want to hear them. I want to hear them. I want to see them. I want to see them go back to brag to mama and daddy when some queer beat the shit out of them. And they have a bloody face. Crawford.
Don't fuck with me, fellas.
Yeah, you don't know? Fuck with me, fellas. You got it. By the way, Scott, I emailed you.
Oh, did you? I got an email earlier today. Was that the one?
Probably. I'm in the middle of preparing for trial, so it's difficult to. Yeah. And Robin can testify to this. It's difficult to.
Yeah, it's hard to. Yeah.
I know what you mean.
You're laser beam focused, and there's really no room for anything else, and nobody sleeps.
And I'm also throwing shit at the wall. Judges are shit.
Well, this is an interesting thing. I didn't know that there was a term for this, but Ron and Raleigh tells me what they're doing is called a strategic pause. They're going to pause it until you're out of time, and then they'll say okay, like they did a few years ago when they okayed a treatment after a patient died. And frankly, all through this, I've been waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Well, that's why I was asking about someone to advocate for you, not to get in on the pleading your case or anything, but it's not as if this whole adventure isn't already fraught with difficulties. I mean, going back to the flaming barbed wire hoops, okay? And now this, that just adds to your distress and uncertainty and upsetness. And, you know, I mean, in medicine, isn't the expression first do no harm? Well, from where I'm sitting, it looks like they're bending over backwards to do as much fucking harm as can be humanly done.
That's the game. I mean, the wheel has
stopped on your number, and we don't like it. I'm with Steve. God damn it. Give me a bandana to put in one of my pockets so I can tell him what I'm into, and hand me a Bic, god damn it. You know? And other than to be outraged, I don't know what else to do. Because people want to advocate for other people. We want to be in one another's corner when the fucking chips are down. And it sounds to me like this is one of those times. But what does one do when you're up against an organization who have their motto on a banner in the main office? You know, we'll do as little as possible, you know, to make your premium dollars be well spent. I mean, that's what it amounts to, doesn't it? I could spit, god damn it. I just...
Bueller?
Well,
Bueller?
Matt in San Francisco says, I'll go down to John's place with Steve. I can do a pretty good Joan Crawford. It'll be fun to watch them weave and suck as they try to avoid the wire hanger.
Amen. Amen. I'm down.
Let's cowbell for the Joan Crawford reference.
Yeah, and let's move the fruits down there. Listen, I can be as rotten a fruit as anybody.
Thank you. Thank you, Jude. Thank you so much for the kind words you're offering. And I need to thank Mark. Thank you, Mark. We are now down to 575 to go to finish the week fully funded. We've started funding for yesterday's program. Thank you. Thank you, Mark.
Hi, Robin.
Yeah, hi.
How are you? I heard the bad news, and I'm sorry to hear you're going through this crap.
It sucks a lot.
I have a question, though, for you guys, since you're attorneys, and you were a former one too.
Yeah.
Is there anything that you guys can look up in the law that you can get back at these SOBs with?
No, I kind of went over that. I kind of went over that with John. They may be immune from suit. And it's the pernicious nature of the judicial system that you may win, but it'll be 5 years from now, and that'll be too late.
Damn.
And that is if they are not immune from suit. The insurance commission is run; it's a wholly owned subsidiary of the insurance commission of the insurance industry. So they hold all the cards, and they know they can behave in as bad a faith as they want to, and too bad for me.
Robin, I'm sorry. I just checked back in. What happened?
My surgery got denied, Steve.
Can I just tell you how fucking angry I am? I just broke my fucking goddamn chopsticks. Fuck! What the fuck? Sorry. Why am I...
Now, Steve, easy, brother. Easy.
I'm sick of this!
Stop. Stop. It doesn't...
I'm sick of fucking regular people getting fucking... I'm sorry.
That's okay. It's okay. I did my crying earlier and was...
I'm not crying! I'm fucking angry!
Well, I was angry too, but I was crying, and I was crying right up till we went on the air, and then I said, hey, gotta do a show. Pull it together.
I'm sorry, everyone.
I'm sorry. I'm sorrier for you because do you have an extra pair of chopsticks laying around?
It's called a fork.
Oh.
This just reminds me when I needed a goddamn MRI for my dislocated shoulder, and some fucking 25-year-old cock knocker said, "Oh no, give him anti-inflammatories because you, Mr. Orthopedist, what the fuck do you know?"
Right.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. It's okay. Thank you.
It's not fucking fair.
No, it's not. But it's an insurance company. And they're not in the fair business.
I'm gonna mute.
I hate it that I've caused you this much angst or anyone that much angst. I've had enough for all of us today. But
listen, Robin,
let me finish, please.
I'm sorry.
Like I said, when I told the community about this journey, I said we're gonna take it together. I will tell you all along the way what's going on. Because it's the lack of people talking about this experience out there that contributes to the fear, the misunderstanding, the hatred. And so I wanted to do my part to try to dispel some of that. And I want y'all to know something. You're giving me determination I might not have had before this program started. I'm mad. And I'm heartbroken. And I'm frightened.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. It's okay. It's okay.
And you have the burden much more than...
I mean, horrible, and I don't mean like, well, I mean, any number of horrible thoughts went through my head. Because something, and I think I've mentioned this before, Tara Devlin taught me a whole lot and has taught me, continues to teach me. And she told me that one of the things about addiction is that it is so pernicious because it speaks to people in their own voice. And that's what makes it so believable and so hard to kick. Well, the more I thought about it, I went and read the 12 steps, and I was like, son of a gun, there's a lot of crossover here with being trans. Not that trans is equal to addiction. It's not a disease. It's a condition. It's like, you know, having gastric reflux. It just happens to some people. But the part about the voice is real, because gender dysphoria speaks to us in our own voice, and it tells us horrible, horrible, horrible things. And the struggle lies in trying not to listen to it, to try to constantly affirm your true nature. And that's where I am, and it's really, really hard. I was supposed to go and work out today, and I walked in and looked at my trainer. It just happened to me, and I looked at my trainer, and I said, I can't. I'm just going to suspend it all. I'm going to walk away from it because it's too much. And I love my trainer to pieces. And she said, I want you to know you've made me a better person. and you're going to continue to make me a better person. And she said, you're going to dig deep, and you're going to find the strength you need, and you're going to get this done. And I appreciated that. And another friend of mine saw me walking out of the gym all falling apart, and she reached out to me and said, are you okay? And I said, no. I told her why. And she said, you're going to fight. One of the strongest people I know, you're going to fight. And so, yeah. Yeah. And you all are giving me strength and reminding me again that this is a community. This is a community. It's not just some, you know, this is not Rush Limbaugh's Ditto Monkeys. This is a community that cares about each other, that doesn't quit caring. And that's so, so important. I've seen this community reach out for so many other people. And I've been part of some of that. I watched, I listened at a distance as a man's life got saved one night on this program. Some of you told me that your lives themselves have been saved. And that amazes and humbles me. Let me share a couple of notes. Matt says, insurance. I watched helplessly as in the last couple of years of her life, my sister would sometimes spend the entire day on the phone with insurance companies for various reasons. I don't know how anyone could work at a place where on a daily basis people call in with literal life and death issues, and my job is to come up with a myriad of reasons why something can't be approved. I'm so sorry to hear this news. Keep fighting, sister. Keep fighting. I don't know what the answer is, but I'll get started looking around on what's available out here in San Francisco. Bless you, Matt. Bless you, my friend. And friend, you are. Family, you are. Cynthia, in the Bay Area, said insurance companies aren't in the coverage business either. Insurance never seems to cover anything. We pay out for big bucks for nothing, just grift. And had said earlier, oh my, not what I wanted to be hearing, Robin. Fight it, fight it, fight it. Scream and yell and stomp your feet. To be sure, my insurance at the time way back when denied me too. I was stupid, ignorant, mostly uninformed in those days. I've heard that in fighting and fighting and fighting it, they will sometimes back down and grant coverage. I could be wrong too. Anyway, I look at it, sickening. Pigs. I need a drink. Sigh. And here, I'm...
You need a drink. I need a fucking drink.
You okay, John?
No.
John, are you okay?
No, you know, I'm going to have to leave the show. I'm so sorry. But before I go, you know, last we were talking about insurance. The Robin's going to face a lot here. She's got a lot to deal with. Anybody that does what we do, you're going to fucking pay a price for this shit. So it takes a lot of courage to do this fucking shit. And with as many problems as Robin has right now, dealing with a surgery that needs to happen and don't know how we're going to get there. What she doesn't need to worry about is day-to-day fucking expenses. And I say this all the time. And you all hear me come on here and tell you how important it is, your donation is to this show to keep Robin's voice going, to keep her life where she has enough to fucking deal with without having to worry about the electric bill or the fucking internet bill or whatever fucking bill that comes up. This is it. This is what we get paid. Sometimes if you ask me, it ain't fucking worth it. But you get up and you do it every fucking day because that's your calling. That's what you're going to do. This is where you're going to make your hill. This is where you're going to make your stand. We fight for not only insurance, health care for all, equality for all. We fight for so much on this show and others. And sometimes in the face of fucking bullshit that you face outside your fucking door. So please, I ask you, before I go, if you've got a few bucks to share it, baby. I ain't going to kill you. We're not asking you to rob your bank. But if you have that money, if you have it to spare to help, please do. Because with as much shit as you got going in your life, the hardest thing sometimes is, well, tomorrow, baby, you got to pay the bill tomorrow. So I ask you, please donate when you can. Keep Robin in your heart. And keep searching for a way to help remedy this bullshit fucking crap that she's in. Nothing like a community to come together and find solutions. Let's find what we have to find. But let's come together and make sure that the least of what she has to worry about are the fucking bills to keep this show going, because it's well worth every dime that is ever offered to this show. And I think that is evident by the community that supports her in this.
Absolutely, John. And I cannot.
Anyway,
your words are so kind, and I know you got to go. But please know, you are my brother, and you are part of the beating heart of this community, and I can never thank you enough. And you are loved.
I love you back, baby. I love you back. We'll see y'all later.
Take care of you people, John.
You bet.
Love you, man. So much truth in what he says. So much truth. Darlene writes, keep pushing. Don't give up. This always happens. I was rejected from my wheelchair and switched insurers and got it totally paid for, then switched back. Sometimes you have to play the game. And the state of Connecticut rejected me twice to cover the cost of necessary access to the garage with a platform lift. I appealed and got someone who was kind and did not want confrontation. Not only did he get the state to approve the $3,000 over the $10,000 max, but when contractors that bid on my project came back with estimates three times more than estimated, the state agreed to pay for the entire project at $40,000. When I pushed again for a larger platform lift, they approved that because it wound up being cheaper. Mind you, the project hasn't begun yet. I've been fighting for a year, and counting the wheelchair, 3 years overall. But it is to be placed out to bid a third time once all the state workers in the BRS program return from their long vacation on the 12th. Yeah, they don't work. Keep pushing, Robin. Don't give up. You just have to accept that the timeline might be a bit too much longer than you want. Keep pushing, appeal, exhaust all options, switch insurers if need be. You'll get there. You have to prove that you really want it. That's life in the U.S. system, unfortunately. My clinical doctor told me you just have to push back. And it's all true. It's all true. And Darlene is fierce and a fighter and hadn't got a nickel's worth of give up in her, because to give up is to ultimately give up. And she's got too much fight in her to let the bastards win. So thank you for that, Darlene. Not giving up. I'm not giving up.
Good.
But this is a grim prospect. I mean, you can all probably remember when I came back from Alabama and I said, we have a date. I remember the Facebook post I put up. So happy. So excited. But there is that part of me that has been waiting for the other shoe to drop. And this morning, a little bastard dropped.
Hey, Robin.
Yeah.
Can I say something real quick? Then I'm going to shut up. Let's talk over the weekend.
Okay.
I'm so...
It's going to be okay.
No, you shouldn't be comforting me.
Well, I mean, it's kind of in my nature. I should be. Because
I'm so fucking angry. This is no skin off their fucking nose.
No, but people don't matter. This is America, okay? I mean, this isn't one rotten-ass insurance company. This is America. This is the brutality that is America. This is how America treats its marginalized communities, among other things. And how one is marginalized doesn't matter. It's just that they know if you are part of a weaker community, they will abuse you because they are for profit, not for people. I mean, what Darlene just described just blows me away. Just to have to sit there over and over and over again. And Matt talking about his sister, whose precious finite time on this planet was limited. And there was an insurance company stealing her very life from her. Sucking the time off the clock. And
we're talking hundreds of dollars. We're talking thousands, even thousands. This is nothing to them.
Yeah, it's. I mean, in the long run, but the thing is, if they run around paying claims in good faith, the next thing you know, well, you know, the shareholders are angry because capitalism. couple other notes. Thank you very kindly to Jack in Shreveport, and thank you so kindly to Betty. Thank you. I think, and that means that we are down to $615. We can be $515. We are $215 away from being done with yesterday's funding, and I'm sorry to just make that, but at this point in time, we're just trying to keep track, and I forget. From Tom in sunny San Rafael. Ah! Oh, Robin, the damned insurance company. I'm devastated. Please keep after them. You've made me a better person, too. Tom, you have no idea what you... You let me check off one of my bucket list things a few years ago, and I will never forget that. If one is going to have one's first experience,
I have an idea.
If one's going to have a first experience in a sailboat, it should be in San Francisco Bay. Thank you, Benny. Or thank you, Ben. Thank you, Ben. Sorry about that. It just shows up that way. Thank you, Ben. Go ahead. Idea.
What if, we were, could set up like a GoFundMe thing and like try to get it viral on Twitter, you know what I mean? Like get the progressive community.
Well, I mean,
you'd be amazed by how effective that can be.
Yeah, you just have to be good at getting it. I mean, there's already a GoFundMe campaign out there to deal with expenses that originally were related solely to my oral surgery. And then when this came along, I created the Horn Inn. And it's already out there. It's I'm sorry about the Bob part, but it's already out there at GoFundBob.com.
Okay. Maybe I'm saying get it viral on Twitter. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The K Hive community is really good at that. And
yeah, that's all true. But by the same token, I was looking for expenses for so I can keep the program, keep everything lit up while I'm away from the mic. And not doing fundraising. But the bottom line is, I have a contract with these rotten motherfuckers. Okay? And in the legal...
Wait, which rotten motherfuckers are you talking about? There have been several to
the insurance company. No, there's only one rotten motherfucker in this conversation, and that is this insurance company.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, you have to sort of get it all the way through your head. I mean... And the trans community knows, okay, whether it's trans guys, trans women, or non-binary, the surgeries are complex, to say the least. And for this no good, shit-eating, weasel of a pathetic attempt of a human being to dare suggest, when it does not exist anywhere in the literature, anywhere in the standards... The idea of an outpatient vaginoplasty does not exist. They don't do them in Thailand. They don't do them in Iran. They don't do them in Germany. They don't do them in France. They don't do them in Italy. They don't do them in the UK. They don't do them in Canada. They don't do them in Tijuana. And they goddamn sure don't do them in the United States. And that is the nugget at the heart of the bad faith in this decision. There is no such thing as outpatient vaginoplasty. Period. You have to be in the hospital in order to be adequately cared for. Because among other things, there are issues of sutures breaking. There is a massive amount of blood loss. One of the things I had to do was sign off on an acceptance for a transfusion.
Yeah.
Because the blood loss can be that bad. This is not cosmetic surgery. This is not for the fun of it. No, no, no trans person goes through this for any reason other than to continue to be a living human being on planet Earth. And every medical professional association is in agreement with that. The American Psychiatric Association, the American Medical Association, the College of Physicians and Surgeons, the World Professional Association for Transgender Health, such as they are. all agree that this is a treatment for a legitimate medical condition and that there is, for all intents and purposes, no other treatment. And to fail to treat it leads to death.
And
this rotten fuck knew all of that and still did what he did for nothing more than a goddamn paycheck. And I'm swearing all over the place, and I'm sorry.
Well, and I don't blame you. I'm telling you that, you know, it would have been just as irresponsible. And I want to know what clothes cover before striking school of medicine and repair.
Draw the pirate or draw Spunky the parrot. It's one of them.
Well, and you know, it was the equivalent of saying, well, Robin, go on down to the Minute Clinic and have them take care of your surgery for you. It's not on their list of menu items. But I'll tell you something, and hopefully this will come through as encouraging words. It was about this time in 2003, I had become homeless and was living in, I had a car at the time, put all my stuff in storage, was living in the car with Michi the Calico Cat and Punky the Cockatiel, and was homeless for the better part of a month. And at the time, there was no way forward. It was like there didn't seem to be any good outcome in the near or even the distant future. But sometimes, you know, life will hand you situations that seem pointless and hopeless all at the same time. But looking back on it, you almost laugh. And maybe one day you'll get a good laugh over this, but not now. Now is the time to plant your feet firmly, gird your loins, and just plow forward like a mountain goat. And know that there are other mountain goats in the flock with you. And when the need arises, the flock will get out. And that is together.
Hey, Robin.
Yeah.
Have they fucking denied coverage to you?
Yes.
God damn it, assholes.
Is this billable?
It's billable here.
Yeah. Hey.
Yeah. I just escaped from an escape room for the last hour. Oh. A team building exercise for my office.
Beautiful. Yeah. Not medically necessary. Billable. Because it can be done on an outpatient basis.
Oh, give me a fucking break. That's like my ex-wife having triple spinal fusion surgery where she had to have like three pints of blood. You know, she had to receive 3 pints of blood as a transfusion, and they're going to do that like in an emergency room. Yeah, right. Give me a fucking break.
Yeah, I'm just supposed to go down to Vaginoplasties R Us. You know, you're in and out, hour, you know, whatever.
Jesus Christ. That can't stand. There's no fucking way.
This is one of the premier Blue Cross Blue Shield companies, primarily of Pennsylvania.
Oh, that's who your coverage is through?
Yeah.
Well, I think you need to like shout this to the mountaintops and give them bad press somehow, because you know, that's one thing that they can't handle, and that, you know, that might actually cause them to reconsider, because that's, you know, that's,
well, I thought about that, but at this point in time, the remedy is for my surgeon to get on the phone with this doctor who denied me.
Yeah.
And I don't want to fuck that up. I don't want to get in his way.
Yeah, you don't want to pull out your nuclear bomb until you really have to use it. You know, you sort of have to.
Yeah, it's probably best we not even use the BOMB word on this in this conversation.
Well, I know that. Let's say you avoid the nuclear option if at all possible.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, they're horrible. They are horrible. They have they've got overseas call centers for their customer service, and among other things, they have given them, I mean, not a nanosecond of training on trans issues. I've told them repeatedly, I'm trans, I'm trans, I'm trans, I'm trans. Oh, thank you, sir. Yeah. Yes, sir. Oh, Mr. Robin, that's great for you, sir. I'm like, stop with the sir. Geez. And I'm not trying to mock any ethnicities. It's just really frustrating and ugh.
It's just bad training. That's what it is. They're basically trying to, you know,
so they don't care.
Who aren't qualified, so they can pay them less. I mean,
yeah, that, they don't care about this community, Rick.
Yeah, no, exactly. I'll give you an example. My son is a computer science graduate out of UC Irvine. He's been looking for work. He got this really lowball offer. The average salary for a software writer, is like $100,000, which is pretty good. And so he got this really lowball offer for like, you know, $35,000 plus possibility of like per diem to maybe make it $45,000, you know, and he could be assigned to any city. He could be assigned to New York City, Chicago. He has no idea where he'd be assigned. And he has training for 8 weeks. And if he has a 2-year commitment, he's got to agree to. If he doesn't honor the commitment, then they can come back and try to get $30,000 from him for the alleged cost of training. It's like, nah, I think I'm worth more than that. I'm going to keep looking.
Yeah, no shit.
That's basically what he decided to do. You know?
Yeah, that's not a potential employer. That's a scam.
Yeah, right.
Anytime they want you to pay them in order to no.
Well, that's if you. That's if you don't do the full 2-year commitment. That's like they claim they can get, you know, they can force you to reimburse them for the cost of training. But, you know, I don't know if that would be doable on their part anyway, you know.
Well, but if that's their game, that must mean that they are a shitty company to work for. I got to share something from Arnold because I'm afraid Arnold is going to vibrate into a million tiny pieces. Arnold says, I hate people. In my opinion, Steve was expressing everyone's rage. I completely agree with him. As a blind man, I often say, leave me in a fucking room with them with no lights. I'm done. Mm. I'll call anyone on your behalf, by the way. My rage is over the fucking moon right now. And thank you for that, Arnold. Jeremy, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, I was trying to cut in. I was just going to say, I had an oh my god moment just now. So, you said your insurance went up suddenly, right?
Oh yeah.
Did it happen just before your policy renewed?
No.
Well, here's my oh god moment. I told you last year we had to switch in companies from insurance because the policy was going up $500. I told them, over the year, no big deal. They said, no, a month because of you. Guess who my insurance company was at the time?
Blue Cross Blue Shield?
Yes.
Yeah. See. Yeah, this is a blue. This is a blue.
Ain't insurance companies grand, huh?
Well, you know, one of the funny things is, I mean, all blues were not created equal. There are blues out there that don't ask any questions, and they even cover things like breast augmentation and facial feminization surgery on the male to female side, and they cover phalloplasty and medioidoplasty and top surgery on the female to male side. And there's no uniformity.
It's
just awful because my policy still thinks that breast augmentation and facial feminization are cosmetic surgeries. When the, you know, again, the great weight of medical opinion is they are not.
Right? No, they're not. Not for some of your situation, for sure. You know, no way. Ah, jeez. Well, you just found out about this today, then, I assume?
Yeah, I found out about it this morning, and it was like a kick in the guts.
This must have been one turd of a day for you. Jesus Christ. Not to mention your premium's like, what, doubled recently. It's like, I mean, it's like, this is what you get for your money now? For your enhanced policy.
Yeah, and see that's the frustrating part of it. That's one of them. Policy ends on December the 31st, and I will probably be uninsurable on January the 1st.
Oh geez. Well, get her done somehow. You know, I mean, I think you're going to be able to. So, again, this is just more time out of your, you know, finite life, unfortunately, that you got to waste. Because of these jagoffs, you know?
Yeah, and, you know, You really would like to give him a good talking to, but you tell me if I'm wrong here, Billable. I mean, you practice.
Okay.
I think this is a pretty, given the fact that there is zero opinion, there is no procedure for doing this surgery on an outpatient basis.
Right.
This is the very essence of first-party insurance bad faith.
Yeah, I would say so.
If you can sue a health insurance provider for not providing coverage. I mean, this is classic breach of contract. In addition to bad faith. But, again, yeah. as anybody who's ever had a client saying, you know, when's something going to happen, you can win and still not win. I mean,
yeah, like it'll take 3 to 5 years for a result, you know?
Right.
How good does that do you, know?
And the horror of depositions and mean lawyers that you really, really want to punch in the face.
Right. Right.
And so it is, to say the very least, a Pyrrhic victory.
Yeah. Yeah. No kidding. I think you're probably right. Your best bet is to get your surgeon on board and have them talk to the doctor who claimed that this could be done on an outpatient basis. I mean, you know, those experts, those so-called, you know, evaluating physicians that work for insurance companies to determine medical necessity, they are like the worst of the worst as far as doctors. They're the doctors who can't make it.
Right.
Private practice.
Yeah, that's what I said earlier. You would not trust them to put a Band-Aid on a cadaver.
Well, you might hurt the cadaver, actually.
He can't do it without malpracticing, and you can't malpractice on somebody who's dead, but this guy probably could.
Well, you know, you got to laugh so you don't cry. You know, that's about all I can think about, Robin. But, you know, it's so transparently incorrect that I can't imagine that would stand. I mean, there's got to be, like, another medical opinion you could request as well.
I did all of my due diligence on this end, Billable. I reached out to my surgeon and his team, and I told them exactly what had happened. I gave them the number that they gave me for him to call, because see, he has to take time out of his schedule that he's not being paid for, and get on the phone with Dr. Thumbbutt. And make a pitch to this clown.
Yeah, right. Where did he get his medical degree anyway?
Well, you know,
University of Timbuktu or something like that?
No, he drew Spunky on the back of a matchbook and mailed it in.
Do they still give medical degrees in Cracker Jack boxes, Bob? Or Robin, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. That's okay. Well, I saw one in a gumball machine just the other day up at the Wiggling Pig.
Oh my God! Well, maybe he could get some brains or something in the gumball machine too. You never know. Mail those to that consulting
brains.
Or whatever
brains. Hey, I gotta share a note that just came in from Cynthia. Because she's been down this road, and she said, "I'll tell you this: while your mileage may vary from person to person, often coming through to the other side of your transition, society gets a much better, more valuable person in return." And society gets a person who can go on to achieve more than they would have otherwise. I achieved far more after my transition than I ever did before. For society, it is an investment, even if I had to pay for the investment myself. But no investment, no return. And she's so right. Yeah. It is indeed profound. And I'm being told by Sparky to wrap it up. Because this conversation has become somewhat monopolized and one-sided, and for that I sincerely apologize. It's not the usual laugh riot that we have on Fridays. And I will try to do a better job with the program. I've been waiting and waiting and waiting on all of this, and now that it's happened, then there's some sort of clarity. Hi, Clarity. On this. That wasn't there before. It's not the clarity that I wanted. No, really, hi, Clarity. But it is not certain. It is just that the parameters of the struggle are very well and clearly defined now. And so we go forward that way. And
you have a month and a day. A month and a day still, Rob.
Yeah, I got a month and a day. And yep. Here's how the next part of the game will play out. My surgeon is a nice guy. He's a good guy. He's competent. Mm-hmm. And so he will jump on things. And he'll say, "Okay, let's set up this phone call with Dr. Thumbbutt." Mm-hmm. And then Dr. Thumbbutt will have scheduling conflicts from now until about November the 10th.
Oh, geez.
I mean, I understand how this shit works, and it will become a fight that way. And so, you know, Bill,
sounds like IRS agents who make an adverse decision as to your client here, try to get them to reconsider, and they just keep postponing.
Yeah.
Then you got to go to the tax court.
Yeah, there's an old phrase that we learned in dealing with politicians in regard to mountaintop removal, and that saying is delay, fail.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, that's what the Senate does. That's what the Senate does with the fucking filibuster. You
right.
know.
That's exactly what it is.
You know, bills go there to die. Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, that's where all this stands. It's a hell of a mess, but in light of the fact that that I have been kind of a mess lately, and, you know, one of the people I know who has been through this told me back when I got my date, she said, you feel like a mess now. You are going to be a bigger mess every day until it happens. And by the time it does happen, you will jump onto the table. You will no longer be nervous. You will no longer be apprehensive. You will have not an iota of fear, and you will be leaping, trying to get this thing done.
Yeah,
and
no doubt about that.
That has become even more apparent in the last 12 hours or so.
Right. This will happen. This will happen, Robin. I know. I have confidence. That you know you're going to get her done, you know it's going to happen.
Literally, I'm going to get her done.
Yeah, exactly. There you go.
Yeah. So I thank you, Billable Rick, and I thank everybody else. If you're listening over the course of the weekend, the overnight crew, whatever, we are at $515 to finish funding for this week, and it would be most helpful. Thanks to everybody who has jumped in on this conversation. Again, if you found it a downer, I apologize. But again, I said that I would take the community with me through this process, and that includes the bitter as well as the sweet. There's been a lot of sweet. Today has been a real mouthful of bitter. But I thank you. I thank you for joining with me in all of this, and super special thanks to John Bridevaux, because I know John has his own hell in which he is living, and to offer the support that he does is simply heartwarming and touching and special and good. Jude in the Great Northwest says, "I stand with Billable." Well, hear, hear. Thank you, Jude. Thank you. Darlene notes, not necessarily. Dr. Thumbbutt may actually want you to get that surgery in hospital, but your doctor has to call and have the heart-to-heart. It's just checking off the boxes. I agree with Billable. Your GCS is going to happen. Thank you, Darlene. I have to think that, too. And thank you, Tracy, for confirming that. And thank you for every bit of the affirmation y'all have offered. It means so very much. I cannot fully express it. This is just a constant exercise in beauty and wonder and kindness and goodness. And I thank you all for it. I thank you especially, thank you to our Patreon and PayPal subscribers, our a la carte contributors. You're why the program continues to exist. Thank you to each and every one of you who shares your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky and Steve. Didn't even hear from Steve this evening. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Remember, brand new, fresh Malloy on the way, 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific. The best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is, of course, HeadOn.live. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. Now, a union shop. 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Please stay safe. Get your vaccine, get your booster if you can. Wash your hands, don't touch your face like Joe Manchin did all last night. Use your hand sanitizer. He didn't do that either. Wear your mask. Keep your social distance. And for God's sakes, if somebody comes towards you saying, well, I don't want this to become an entitlement society, avoid that person like the plague. Because he is. Have a great weekend, everybody. Later.